means that we can talk some more about them on Tuesday when you're back. Spencer, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Deborah.
Okay. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a very great, great weekend. I hope that you can join me on Monday. I look forward to it. And please stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up right after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Karen Riegel. Two Mercedes found in London today. Two loaded Mercedes.
There was a considerable amount of fuel and gas canisters. As in the first vehicle, there is also a substantial quantity of nails.
Scotland Yard's chief of anti-terror, Peter Clark, says the two cars are obviously connected.
The discovery of what appears to be a second bomb is obviously troubling and reinforces the need for the public to be alert.
Those two Mercedes were found just before London marks the second anniversary of their subway attacks that killed more than 50 people. Back here in the U.S., authorities are watching just in case.
They say there is no credible threat of any kind of imminent danger in America. There's no intelligence saying that Al-Qaeda or anybody else is planning any kind of attack. But we know for a long time that these terrorist groups have sought these kinds of weapons and have sought to attack the U.S. And the fact now that two have emerged in London, even though they did not explode, is a further warning to America to be on guard.
That's CBS News correspondent Bob Orr. The U.S. is hoping a new kind of vehicle will do more to protect soldiers. Defense Secretary Robert Gates says he's ordering a faster production of the mine-resistant armored vehicle. It's known as MRAP.
We're beginning to see IEDs in Afghanistan. This is not a problem, I think, that's going to be confined to Iraq. And so we need to keep working on it and find ways to protect our soldiers and Marines.
Troops are, for the most part, using Humvees to get around. The rain won't stop in Oklahoma, and that's setting records.
Oklahoma City has had 17 straight days of rain. That's a record. 20 days in June in Oklahoma City. It's been probably the rainiest month on record, certainly in the metro area of Oklahoma City, and statewide it's got to be one of the rainiest ever.
Dan Matthews is with KWTV. Meantime, President Bush has declared six North and Central Texas counties disaster areas today. 11 have died in storms and flooding there this month. Apple's iPhone is officially on sale, on the East Coast anyway. Some people have been waiting in line for days to get their paws on one. The mayor of Philadelphia joined the line outside the store at 3:30 this morning.
I'll do most of the things that I can do here. I have a couple of events that I will go to. But in order to do those events, I'll just leave here and I'll have somebody sit in my chair.
Street left after a passerby asked about Philly's murder rate. An aide's filling his spot now. The PDA, music player, and phone all in one will cost you at least $500. That is, if you can find one. The Dow closed down 13.66, ending the week at 13,408. The Nasdaq was down 5 points. It closed at 2,603. Oil is up $1.11. It'll cost you $70.68 a barrel. Gold was up, silver was down. This is CBS News.
There are two essentials for any summer getaway: a good sunscreen and a good set of tires. So visit your Goodyear retailer now and get up to a $50 cash card by mail-in offer with the purchase of a set of four select Goodyear tires. Or double your cash card up to $100 when purchased on your Goodyear credit card. Goodyear, get there. Offer valid 6/24 through 7/21/07. Go to GoodyearTires.com or see your participating Goodyear retailer for your mail-in form and complete details. Certain restrictions apply. Goodyear credit card purchase is subject to credit approval.
Aflac for small business. How can I help you?
Yeah, you cover small business?
Yes, we do.
Great, because I'm an ant.
Okay.
I got a tunneling business. You dig?
How many employees?
Well, it's a family-run business. Just me and my aunts.
Well, with Aflac for small business, you can enjoy a lot of the benefits of a big business.
Great.
Just call 1-800-99-AFLAC.
Did that.
Or go to AflacSB.com. Aflac for small business. Because small business needs...
Aflac!
Too.
Gotta run. Company picnic.
American Family Life Insurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
Nearly a century after she sank, the world hasn't stopped being fascinated by the RMS Titanic. Correspondent Steve Kathan has more.
Iceberg, what a...
Nothing could stop the New York auction of Titanic memorabilia. A deck log from one of the rescue ships went for $102,000. A list of passengers with names like Astor and Guggenheim sold for $48,000. Both were well over the pre-auction estimates. A handwritten 8-page account penned by a 16-year-old passenger sold for close to $17,000. Steve Kathan, CBS News, New York.
You know how smart your dog is. Shouldn't he be allowed to vote? A Seattle woman registered her dog, Duncan. Jane Ballow says it was in protest of a voter registration law that she thinks makes it far too easy for non-citizens to vote. She's pled not guilty to charges of making a false statement. And how did Duncan fill out the ballot? Well, he dipped his paw in ink to make his mark and pick his candidates. Of course. Karen Riegel, CBS News.
Who doesn't love summer? The longer days, baseball games, and of course, road trips. That's why Econolodge and Rodeway Inn Hotels are giving you a free $50 gas card. With our Easy Choice Rewards program, just redeem 6 stamps for your free $50 gas card. It's one more reason to love summer. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com today. We'll see you there.
Earn 1 stamp per night. Maximum 5 stamps for qualifying stay. Redeem 6 stamps between 6-1 and 8-16-07 to receive gas card. For details, visit easychoiceonline.com.
Hi, what can I get you, sir?
I'll have a tall cappuccino with a touch of cinnamon and some peace of mind, please.
You got it.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles, because we notice everything. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection. You even get a vehicle history report, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. Now that's peace of mind.
Oh, and I'll have some confidence, too.
See your dealer for limited warranty coverage details or visit FordCPO.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Are you planning an airline flight in the near future? You must be crazy.
I remember when I lost my mind.
Yeah, it was when I had to take off my shoes and my belt and my pants fell down there right at the TSA security checkpoint. Then I knew I was really crazy when they said, that's more than 3 ounces of water in that crystal geyser bottle. It's got to go. Then you dash to the gate and they tell you, oh, don't worry, your flight's not leaving for another day and a half. I'll tell you, airline flights these days tend to make you crazy. That's what we're going to talk about this hour, and I'll explain why. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. We had scheduled an exclusive dynamic interview with a great guy, Mike Farrell, Hollywood actor who you know from MASH and Providence. And he's written a new book about him. It's an autobiography about his acting and his activism. I know him best as an anti-capital punishment activist. And Mike called early this morning and said, sorry, I'm going to have to reschedule because I'm on airplanes all day and it's already 2 hours behind. And huddling with my ace producer, Katrina Rill, we said, well, that's the story. That's the story we'll replace Mike Farrell with today. And so we're going to talk about the airline blues. And if you have recently traveled on a commercial flight, you probably know what I'm talking about. The airlines are kind of back on the upswing. Flights are booked at 85% or higher capacity for most routes this summer. And when problems develop, whether from the weather or circumstances controllable by the airlines, all hell breaks loose. That is true. Joining us to talk about the problems and what consumers, the flying public, can do about it is Kate Hanai, and she is with the website called FlyersRights.org. And it's interesting because before the end of this hour, Kate Hanai is planning to get on a flight.
Yes, unfortunately.
You must be crazy, lady.
Well, I don't have much of a choice. I live in Napa, California, and I'm lobbying Congress for an airline passenger bill of rights, so I have to fly to D.C. to do that.
Well, there's always Amtrak.
all the way from California? I guess so.
If you've got a week.
What? I never find out anything until the last minute.
Right.
And so I end up, you know, they'll call me and say, tomorrow we're announcing the markup. Mm-hmm. It would be almost impossible to make it overnight unless I flew.
I understand that. And, of course, we all expect that if we're willing to pay the freight, even at the last minute, we should be able to get on a flight. But things are really tight out there, and consumers are fuming, steaming. They're in a furor, and, well, we've got a lot of reasons. Kate, let me just tell you my most recent sob story, because I understand you're going to take a flight on JetBlue today. And
yes.
Are you going to do the nonstop from Dulles to Oakland?
Yes.
Okay. I have flown that route 6 times.
Yes.
I like JetBlue. I think they have a good image, and despite their meltdown earlier this year, I've gotten good service from them, very few delays. My recent flight was the major exception. I was flying out of Washington to Oakland on a 6:30 a.m. flight on a Wednesday, and hauled my butt out of bed at 4:15 a.m. That was not easy. The car that I had arranged to pick me up with a guy named Innocent didn't show at the hotel.
Innocent was guilty.
So yeah. I had to pay extra to take a cab, but I did get there a full hour before the flight was scheduled to depart. I did the check-in dance, and nobody said, your flight might be delayed. Why don't you go take a nap somewhere? So I get all the way out to the gate, and you know how it is at Dulles. You got to either take the shuttle or walk through the tunnel to the whole other terminal. And so I get there, and I buy myself a little breakfast, and I show up at the gate, and nobody says nothing. But I notice that there is no plane there. And there's no plane half an hour before our departure time, 20 minutes before, and about 15 minutes before, you usually are about ready to board or maybe even in the process. Somebody came on and said, by the way, your flight
is... There's no plane.
Well, there was a plane, but it was not at the gate. It was parked out in the middle of the field, and they ultimately bussed us out there to it. But the hang-up was there had been a thunderstorm the night before, and the plane that was supposed to take us from Oakland had not come in from wherever it was supposed to arrive from. So they had a plane, but they didn't have a crew. And nobody seemed to notice that until it was way too late. Bottom line, it was a terrible day, and I arrived in Oakland 2.5 hours late in time to get into the traffic jam caused by the Oakland A's game. And almost missed my broadcast date here on the show. But my episode is minor compared to the couple I met in the lounge there. They had an 8-month-old baby, and this was the second day they were trying to fly Dulles to Oakland.
Yes.
And the day before, they spent 3.5 hours on a plane that did not take off.
Yep.
And this is something I was just reading Joe Sharkey's a recent article in the New York Times. This is happening a lot. They put you on the plane, they push back from the gate, and even if the air conditioning doesn't work or there are other problems, they lock people into those planes and leave them on the tarmac for hours.
You want to know why?
Why? Because it saves them money.
Well, actually, the pilots, most of their contracts state that they have to be pushed back from the gate or they're not getting paid.
Oh.
And so even if they know that they're not going to be able to take off, it's to their benefit to get you on the plane and push back from the gate. Almost all the pilots and flight attendants have that. The United flight attendants have a guarantee, but most of the rest of them don't.
Hmm.
So there's an incentive for them to get out on the tarmac and then sit there. And the other thing is that, of course, the airline management, if it's in a situation like ours where we were stranded on a plane for 9.5 hours on the tarmac in Austin, they didn't want to cancel our flights because then they have to refund your money.
Mm-hmm.
So they like to keep you captive. They like to keep the revenues captive and not release them ever back to you if they can avoid it. And at all costs, they're going to blame things on the weather or air traffic control because that's in their contract of carriage, how they can get away with what they're doing.
Right. So Kate Hanna is with us. FlyersRights.org is the website. If you have a sob story that you'd like to share with us, we'll take your calls this entire hour about airline problems. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. A little bit later this hour, Richard Rappaport will join us. He's a friend of mine, a writer, and he was on a flight out of Chicago the other day that had a fender bender. The big plane ran into a little plane right there on the runway. And he's got a story to tell about that. So there are all kinds of things going on. Clearly the system is maxed out. The employees...
Did you know that Joe Sharkey was in a mid-air collision?
No.
And survived. Yeah, that's his story.
Wow.
Yeah, big deal.
Now, Kate Hanna, what caused you to get active about our rights as members of the flying public?
Well, my husband is a master of wine, and we live in Napa, and he had arranged this wonderful vacation for the family. And I've got a son who's 22 and one that's 11, so we don't get a lot of a chance to spend time together, all four of us.
Mm-hmm.
So he had arranged this wonderful vacation in Point Clear, Alabama, at a Marriott that he does some work with. And it was going to be free in exchange for him doing some wine programs. And so we were very excited. We take off from San Francisco. We're headed towards DFW for our connecting flight, and we're diverted to Austin. And that's to wait out the weather clearing at DFW. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? We're on the tarmac for 9.5 hours in Austin. We see ambulances going to planes. We see police cars going to planes and arresting people for tarmac rage. Hazmat going to a plane because a dog pooped all over some passengers.
Oh, boy.
And this was all because the airlines didn't want to cancel the flights, refund the money, and let people off so they could make their own arrangements and get to where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we did deplane, our pilot finally said, I might lose my job, but I'm going to take us in. He said, we'll get your bags off the plane. So we waited 2.5 hours, and they did not. And then a security guard, there was no one from American Airlines anywhere to be found.
Oh, you bet.
To answer a question.
They've all been laid off.
There's no, yeah, exactly. And so the security guard said, oh, they decided a couple hours ago not to remove the bags. Just be back here at 6 in the morning to resume your flight. And I'm thinking, how are we going to get back in the airport? And it did become a problem the next morning. If had our flight not been on the cover of the Dallas Morning News,
mm-hmm.
we would not have been let back in the airport because we had no boarding information.
Yeah.
And they never knew our flight was even there. And this there were 121 planes during this event that went through the same thing that night, 13 on our tarmac. So mm-hmm. it was a big deal. And then none of us exchanged contact information until a week or so after we arrived at our got home from our vacations or wherever we were going. And what happened is that I did a blog, my first blog and a Google search, and I was looking for other passengers from our flights to see if American had compensated anyone for this disaster. And, you know, people were angry and they were, you know, recording their remarks on Flyer Talk and some different blogs. And so I put my contact information in there and we started to coalesce.
Mm-hmm.
And became a group of about 40 people. And then they decided that I should be the spokeswoman, and I thought, that's fine. I had no idea that I would be lobbying Congress within a couple months for a bill, which has been the most amazing experience.
Well, we can get you an office on K Street. You know, Jack Abramoff had to vacate, and there's some leases there real cheap.
Kate, cool.
Kate, hang on. We got to take a break and run some airline commercials. We'll be back with Kate Hanna. Visit the website flyersrights.org. In the next segment, we'll talk about a proposed passenger bill of rights. And if you want to join us with a sob story or a nightmare from airline travel, give us a call. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. I'm currently grounded, and it's better that way. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Everyone wants to know a great hairstylist, and I want to share mine with you. Dallas and Ashley at Malibu by the Sea, 2024 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey. Malibu by the Sea is a full-service salon and bronzing spa. You can slip in for a tan and then have them create a stunning look for you. They perform cuts, color, multidimensional highlights, and the highest quality of human hair extensions. Dallas and Ashley, simply the best, making you look your best. Call them at 383-0807. That's 383-0807.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955. Or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Hi, it's Sheila Gale reminding you to listen to my show, 12-Step Talk Uncensored, all about addictions, every Saturday, 4 to 5 in the afternoon, 12-Step Talk Uncensored, where we deal with addictions, taking the shame and the blame out of this horrible disease. 12-Step Talk Uncensored, it's about time. Sponsored by Sun Street Centers, Building Healthy Communities, a drug and alcohol treatment center in Monterey County. For more information, call 753-5135, Sun Street Centers.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmel Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Carmel Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show talking about airline nightmares, and this portion of the program is brought to you by Naked Airlines. It's the way to fly.
I used to fly with my clothes on till the airline clothing banned. We went from scanning to banning. One airline had tanning, and this was the ad they ran. Fly safe, fly naked, no weapons to find. You're safer with nothing on. Naked Airlines.
Kate Hanai is with us, and for our listeners in Arcata, I understand that you're a member of the crew family from Arcata.
I am.
You want to give a shout out to your buddies?
Well, hello, class of 78. Eureka High.
Now, Kate.
Eureka High, you are the only school for me.
Oh, that's beautiful. Now, I understand you're on a tight schedule because a car's going to come to take you to the airport here in just a couple of minutes. So tell me when you got to go, and we'll release you.
Okay, great.
But tell us what progress you're making toward the proposed Bill of Rights for airline passengers that is posted
on the website at flyersrights.org.
Yes. Well, we're actually way past the proposal stage. Congressman Mike Thompson from our district, mm-hmm. and that includes Humboldt County and Napa.
It does.
He brought a bill on the House side, and then Barbara Boxer and Olympia Snow brought a bill on the Senate side. And not only have those bills been, you know, dropped, but on the Senate side, the markup was a month ago, and on the House side, the markup was yesterday.
Mm.
So we're actually the first passenger rights organization to ever get any passenger rights legislation marked up and out of a subcommittee, which
mm-hmm.
is pretty remarkable.
And so we have a right to remain silent when the flight doesn't take off, right?
We now are going to have the airlines are going to be culpable for what they do, and there's going to be rules and regulations in place, assuming that the vote, you know, passes when they come together, the Senate and the House,
mm-hmm.
that will take care of our basic human needs. The one thing that's still not in the bill that we are pushing for is a time frame for deplanement if you're stuck on the ground.
Right.
That was probably the most important thing that we were pushing for. We have gotten a lot of other things in the bill that are very important, but the one thing that we are, you know, that's really a deal breaker, and we're going to keep pushing for it until it hits the floor, is this time frame for deplanement, because people just cannot tolerate being held for longer than 3 hours on the tarmac with 2 30-minute extensions, which makes it really 4 hours.
Yeah.
They just go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unrealistic to assume that people with compromised health or possibly compromised mental states could handle that kind of situation. And we call it tarmac rage, and we witnessed it.
Sure.
And the other thing is, you know, it really doesn't benefit the airlines either. I'm not quite sure how it is they think. We believe that ticket prices will go down. And why we think this is that every time they divert a flight, they're burning fuel, they're paying the crew, and that plane is not able to pick up any other passengers
mm-hmm.
and take it somewhere else. So that's where we are. We have our bills. They've been marked up. We're fighting like crazy to get a couple things added to the bills, but we are extremely excited about, you know, what we've got at
yeah.
this point.
Well, and threaten them that passengers are going to mutiny if they don't start to address this soon. Because even on the flights that I've been on, there was a really strong undercurrent of people who, you know, if they had something bigger than a plastic spoon, might do something with it.
That's right. That's right. Well, there were a group of guys that had gotten a few drinks, I think, before the plane was tarmacked, and they were on the plane next to ours, and the police came and arrested them. They broke out in a fist fight
mm-hmm.
on the plane after, I think, about the seventh hour. And,
wow.
You know, and, you know, a lot of people were saying, I want off this plane, but, you know, since 9-1-1, everyone's aware it's a federal offense, so kind of restrains people just knowing that they're going to end up in, you know, possibly in jail or a federal prison
mm-hmm.
for doing something on a plane. But, you know, really we're pushing for very, very basic human needs to be met. Food, water, medicines, hygienic toilets. You know, our toilets overflowed on our plane.
Sure.
No one could go to the restroom, and the ability for people to get their medicines if they need it. And the right to deplane. We want fair and truthful reporting of chronically delayed flights
mm-hmm.
and chronically canceled flights, so that when you go to buy a ticket, it will say right there, this flight is late, you know, 100% of the time or whatever it is. and then you'll know, I don't have a very good chance of making my connecting flight if I buy this ticket. So
right.
Maybe I should choose a different flight.
All right, Kate, I want you to scoot because we're a couple of minutes past our agreed-upon deadline, and I want you
yes?
to make that flight. You got to go out there to Dulles and wait.
I do.
All right. And when you get to the plane, if there are any developments, give us a call, okay?
You bet.
All right, 888-5, Peter B. It works from most airplanes.
Okay, great.
Nice to meet you.
Thank
you so much. Thanks for your work. You're fighting for all of us.
You bet I am.
Kate Hanai. And again, visit the website. I got it right here. It's called flyersrights.org. And take a look at their passenger bill of rights and support it. Let Mike Thompson, Barbara Boxer, know that you believe in this. We're going to take a break and then talk more about airline problems. You can call us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. Richard Rappaport checks in next to talk about a little fender bender between an airliner and a smaller plane at O'Hare.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com. Stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready!
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Yeah. Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' 3 generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Tom Hartman.
Why would we hand the beating heart of democracy, the vote, over to a private corporation?
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
And we're giving it to a corporation called Diebold, whose former president, Wally O'Dell, says, you know, I'm going to give Ohio to George W. Bush. We're giving it to a corporation like ES&S, who used to be run by Chuck Hagel, the Republican senator from Nebraska. I mean, it's our vote!
Tom Hartman, weekday evenings on KRXA 540. Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Mm-hmm. I certainly support a Bill of Rights for airline passengers. And if you've had a nightmare or even a daydream nightmare, well, that's not right. You know what I mean. A nightmare during the daytime, flying on a commercial airliner recently, go ahead and share your story. Dr. Collins will let you lie on the couch here and just vent. 888-5-PETER-B is our number. 888-573-8372. And I actually think that the road to hell is now accessed through gate 19E at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago.
This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road.
As we mentioned, this story or this topic that we're discussing is a substitute because the guest we had scheduled for this time period today, Mike Farrell, couldn't make it because his day has been ruined by the airlines. He was traveling and had expected to be at his destination well in time to pick up a landline and talk with us here on the program today. But he called way early this morning and said, it's not going to happen because I have already been, I guess he had a three-leg flight to make. And the first leg was delayed, and he didn't think he was going to be there in time to pick up the next two. So Richard Rappaport joins us now. He's a friend of mine, and we were planning to have lunch today. And I just mentioned this to him, and he said, oh, I was just in Chicago, and he's got quite a story to tell. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Not bad.
Actually, the road to hell is through 18B.
Oh, it's 18B. That's where you got on the flight that had a little accident on the runway?
Yeah, I don't know what you call an airline fender bender. I, you know, hopefully you don't call it anything. But
it's aileron to aileron contact.
That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Wing to tail, chasing your own wing. I don't know. But we're on a 777, which is a very expensive plane, and there was a smaller American Airlines flight parked, and there was a rainstorm. I mean, the pilot was not entirely responsible. It was pretty rainy out, but all of a sudden what sounded like somewhere between fingernails across a chalkboard and those bumper strips, you know, before you get to the toll booth,
mm-hmm.
and everybody was just started ran over and started looking out the window, and we had basically taken the tail off a, what are they called, MD... 30s, something like that.
Oh, that's a little regional puddle jumper.
Not worth the effort, actually.
And was that plane parked or was it taxiing as well?
It was parked, so I think it was our fault.
Okay.
There were no cops out there to write any tickets, so I don't know quite how they do this. But
now, was Homer Simpson at the controls of your plane?
No.
No, he wasn't.
could have been. He said he came on shortly afterwards and said something incredible. He said, "I made a boo-boo. This flight is terminated."
That's technical language for you.
So anyway, we had our little accident, and then we pulled back to the terminal, and all of a sudden there were 350 extra people that they couldn't find seats for.
Yeah.
So, then the real misery began, I suppose, because they found another plane, but it wouldn't take off for another 18 hours. So a lot of people were just stuck. I guess they were finally giving out some hotel vouchers, but sparingly.
Mm-hmm. And you're a resourceful guy. You've traveled maybe a million or 2 miles. What did you do, and did you... You're probably a premier or something like that. Did you throw your weight around and say, "Come on, take care of me. I'm a valued customer."
No, I tell you what, you don't want them to single you out. You know, it's kind of the herd thing. I did what everybody else did. As soon as the pilot made the announcement, I got on my cell phone and I called the travel agent and said, "Please find me a flight out of Chicago."
And was your agent successful?
Well, she was, except it was the last flight out, United, and it was about 2 hours late.
Mm-hmm.
So I got in about 2:30 in the morning. Interestingly enough, my bags got there before I did.
Oh.
I just wonder if I tucked myself in, you know, the bag, whether I just could have, you know, stowed aboard or something like that.
Well, you know, if the baggage compartment were heated and pressurized, it would be much more tempting because these days the humiliation that you have to put up with to book a flight, I mean, just we won't get bogged down in this, but you now have a choice of calling a phone center in India, where, frankly, they give you very poor service and they don't have an idea of, you know, how to anticipate what you want and, you know, what might solve a problem. Instead, they just say, yes, you're going to Indianapolis, whether you like it or not. And so it starts off with the call centers, which drives us all to the Internet, where you can spend hours trying to look for a flight at a reasonable rate that gets you where you want to go when you want to be there.
Right. And as soon as you click on it, it's no longer available.
Oh, yeah.
Most amazing thing.
Or the price goes up. I've had that happen where I'm sitting there looking at a screen, and I click buy it, and boom, you go to the next screen, and it's $50 more.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the airlines because they're, you know, the most secretive organizations of all in a lot of ways, and I would like to know who sets the ticket prices and how. I mean, it's got to be some really twisted James Angleton kind of person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just somebody really weird who likes to screw with a lot of people.
And who never flies him or herself.
Right, ever.
I imagine, you know, there's several bunkers underground at an airport in either Houston or Dallas. That's just my image.
All right, and these people have not seen the light of day in 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Not since the late 70s when they sort of went inside.
All right, so you get a ticket, then you show up at the airport. You got to be there an hour early. You can't park your car anywhere near the airport anymore. So you get in there, and now, of course, because there were some people who had an idea in England to copycat the Bojinka plot, nobody is allowed on an airplane in the United States with more than, or you can't get past the checkpoint now without, you know, giving up your water bottle. You know, we now have to put all of our little, you know, packages and tubes of potions and gels into a plastic bag. Well, last time I flew, I got to the airport. I got to my hotel finally at the destination. I was bleary-eyed, and it took me a minute to figure out that I was brushing my teeth with Neosporin.
No, probably the better for it, as a matter of fact, because you just never know what you're going to pick up on the plane. I mean, the way they recirculate air,
yeah.
You might have done the right thing, actually.
All right, so then we get through the whole TSA thing, which is just so ridiculous.
Oh, hang on. Yeah, we got to stop there because, you know, this is sort of, talk about the slowing of America. I mean, you sort of, you know, you have a reasonable job, you make a reasonable salary, you don't want to get hassled too much, you're standing in line. And these people who clearly, you know, are being paid minimum wage, just get this look in their eye of just glee. They're just so happy to be able to sort of torment some people.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that whole layer of just angst that you've got to go through standing in line there because you don't dare say anything anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, that's true, and that is the hardest thing for me, Richard, is to stand silently there while I'm steaming and fuming about this.
Well, you shouldn't have to. And, you know, the fact is that's the problem because as soon as the 350 people got marched off our flight, there was one ticket agent there sort of, you know, kind of looking like he had just been poleaxed, and he decided he would stay at his computer and just sort of do one person at a time,
mm-hmm.
which would have ended up taking, you know, a week,
yeah,
probably for 300 people. And he didn't call anybody at first. You know, it was just kind of like, what do we do now? And nobody came out. And I think they were going to pretend it was, like, weather-related.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you have an accident, you like kind of, you know, the silver-haired pilot, chief pilot to come down and say, sorry, you know, we didn't mean this to happen. We're going to get a plane for you right away. Please fly United. Nope, nothing. Just these people kind of rebooking. So, you know, there was no one person to sort of be the agent provocateur, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody decided to say something just to say, wait a minute, you know, this is unacceptable.
Well, and we're afraid to at airports now because these are maximum security zones, and you feel that if you make some sort of a fuss that you're going to get hauled off to Gitmo or something.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm afraid to be talking right now on the show because who knows what, you know, airline secret police are listening in. They're going to get us next time, Peter.
Well, okay. I'll have to change my name. I'll fly under somebody else's name.
Okay. Now, can I just say something here? You know, that what's really important about this, I think, is that there was sort of this unwritten compact between us and the airlines, you know, through most of my life, which was that, you know, prices would be reasonable, service would be reasonable, we could get to wherever we needed to get in the United States within a day. And so we could move away from our parents' houses in Connecticut or Massachusetts and move to California or something, and knew that we were going to be able to get back. And all of a sudden, you know, that whole thing is jeopardized. And are we now going to have to really rethink how we live our lives, where we live, how much we travel? You know, I mean, air travel is not just a luxury, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to get serious about this. But
but I think that it should be regulated, and that deregulation is the real reason that we're having all of these problems. And if we had regulation, I'll bet the ticket prices would be $50 to $75 higher, and I'd be happy to pay it because the level of service would hopefully resemble what we see from the national carriers in Europe. Those are airlines owned by the governments, and they maintain higher standards of accountability and responsiveness to their customers.
Well, I'll tell you, I flew from San Francisco to London on British Airways a couple months ago, and it was what a treat.
Yeah.
You know, it was run like a British ship, and the pursers were very professional. It was just kind of a cut above. And I don't know what it is, you know, about American Airlines at this point, but they have no pride,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's
well, I agree with you about British. And, in fact, Richard, I rack up my credit card miles on British Airlines. I have 140,000, and they won't let me use them because their flights are booked like 9 months in advance. So it's frustrating that way because I would love to be able to, you know, fly the better carriers as I intend to, but there is so much demand there that it's very hard for them to supply it. So the one other thing I want to mention, we got a break coming up here, is just the whole preposterous nature of this liquid ban. Because, you know, they take away our water bottles, and then 50 feet later you can go buy a new one.
Well, that's exactly what it is. You know, they just aren't selling enough.
And even if you have a sealed bottle, now here's something that happened to me on a recent flight. I got to the airport a little late, and instead of checking my bag, without thinking what was in it, I just took it right through the checkpoint. And I forgot that I had a bottle of a really nice California Shiraz in there, and it showed up on the scanner. And I'm, you know, hurrying to get to the plane, and I'm saying, look, just take it. You know what it is. It's in there. Take it. Well, it took a while for the next TSA person to come over, and as I tried to reach into my bag to help her find it, you know, she treated me like a criminal. Oh, don't touch that. Back off. And it's like, come on, lady. We all know what's going on here. I forgot I have a bottle of wine there. I'm about to cough it up to you. Let me give it to you.
Well, when you end up treating people like criminals and like idiots, you know, eventually it gets institutionalized, and people indeed do turn into criminals and idiots. And I think that's just what's happening now, and it's just a horror to watch. It's not funny.
It sure is. Time for a break now. We'll return with Richard Rappaport. And if you have a comment, you want to share a story, we'd love to hear from you. Lines open right now, 888-5-PETER-B, toll free, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. We're on time and under budget.
I'll tell you what I got cooking, Dinners Ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinners Ready?
That's right, Dinners Ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready!
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school. when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Do it.
So you got a choice. You pack the family into the van or car and pay $3.50 a gallon to get to your destination. But you're mostly in control, and if you want to get out and go to the bathroom, you can. Or you can buy an airline ticket and takes your chances. We're talking with Richard. We won't give his last name. He's concerned that airline authorities might be monitoring this broadcast and punish him on a future flight. And we're joined by Nick from Royal Oak. Is that Royal Oak, California?
Yes.
All right, great. Nick, what's on your mind?
I haven't flown since 91, but I get the viewpoint every time it comes in through the news, and it's a lot that these planes are turning around right after takeoff because of a slight incident that has already been taken care of, and they're landing with the full tank of gas, increasing the danger of the people on board. A 100-fold, and it's just a great day, and they see all these things going idiotically wrong, and so, like the fire, I believe these fires, they're just under, they should be under unmanned. I mean, they don't have the planes there under insurance causes and losing people, which is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Nick, take a deep breath there. I think you're a little nervous, and go ahead and tell me what your central point is.
Well, I'm watching all these people being inconvenienced because the plane has to come down and land, and the scene's already taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
There could be timers, but they're most, and even little malfunction on the plane that they're landing on full loads and
mm-hmm.
gasoline, and I don't want to be in that situation. I've come from a history of people being in aviation, and they tell you the first thing is landing gear. You know, the chance of collapsing is very much greater. And,
mm-hmm. All right, Nick.
And
I appreciate.
And then I'm looking at everybody in control. They have a big plane that douse fires, and they didn't even use it on the best weather conditions today. They call mm-hmm. and they're learning things, but mm-hmm. they've already been learned. So they're really stagnant.
All right, got it. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate you checking in today. I'm not sure exactly.
Hello.
I'm not sure exactly. You still there, Richard? Hi, Richard. I hear Richard there in the. I hear his radio in the background. I guess I lost him there. Brian, let's call Richard back. Just had to reach down and press a little button there, so we'll call Richard back and get him on the line. Anyway, I'm not sure exactly what Nick was driving at, but here are some tips that the San Francisco Chronicle published today for people who want to try to reduce their risk of airline nightmares this summer. They're suggesting you use small regional airports instead of the big major hubs. Now, most of us don't have a choice on that, depending on where you're traveling. Book flights early in the day to avoid weather delays. Okay, that might help. Also, you know, if you start out earlier in the day, you have more room to be delayed and still get to your destination by the end of that same day. They say carry bottled water, which you'll have to buy after you pass through security, and food when you get on the plane in case you're stuck in a parked aircraft for hours, and use handheld devices and other mobile technology to get the latest information. Well, you know, most airlines now tell you that they'll contact you if there are major delays. And I've never been contacted by an airline, even when I give them my cell phone. And even there have been cases when I call on the way to the airport and they don't tell you about a delay. And you get there and it's very clear that they have known for hours. So that communication component is something that could easily be improved. And I'm sorry that it takes the specter of additional or new regulations to force the airlines to do what is in their self-interest. Richard's back with us. And, Richard, what do you think are some of the things that we need to demand in order to get a basic level of service back for the American flying public?
Well, you know, I think what you were talking about before in terms of re-regulation, I mean, if you sort of look across the board, you know, I mean, it's not just airlines. It's food, it's drugs, it's gasoline, it's health care. You know, there has been a concerted effort on the part of, you know, this administration and, you know, Republicans in general just to sort of take away all the safeguards that have protected, you know, the American public for a long time. So, you know, that's what's got to happen. It's not going to happen until you have a Democrat in the White House. And even then, of course, at this point, you know, having bankrupted the country, it's going to be real expensive to do something like that. But I tell you what, you know, as far as safety is concerned, you know, it's entirely possible that what happened to me, you know, was just a mistake. You know, it happens every once in a while. A plane hits another plane. But, you know, if that plane had been up in the air, if those two planes had been up in the air, there would have been about 500 people, 450 people killed. And, you know, then it would have been cheaper ahead of time to sort of do the things that needed to be done. So, you know, some industries are not amenable to the lowest possible cost all the time.
The other thing that's occurred is that the workforces in the airline industry have just been devastated. And we have a whole spate of new non-union carriers that have hired people with very little experience who work for lower wages than the old carriers used to pay. And we're seeing it. When they cracked down on liquids on flights, it caused a lot of people to check bags. And as the number of checked bags increased starting last September, the number of lost bags spiked. And that can be attributed to cost cutting and to the new class of workers who are not unionized and who are probably not as well trained as their predecessors were. And I also think that you have to examine the impact on the attitude of a worker who has had his or her pension brutally taken away through the bankruptcy process as they watch the executives of that same airline hold on to their pensions and their multi-million dollar salaries and stock options to boot.
Well, you know, you have to have tremendous sympathy for the front line, you know, in any of these businesses. You know, I mean, the flight attendants, it's really hard to sort of be at your best when, you know, you've just had your financial heart cut out. And, you know, whenever things are going badly, it's kind of like the airlines take away from their employees. But it doesn't seem they ever give it back. So there's been kind of this ongoing downsizing. And, you know, I just hope it hasn't reached to the people who are fixing the engines.
Yeah.
You know, that's always, I mean, I can sort of, you know, stand it if there are no more hot meals on planes. Although, you know, I happen to think that, you know, there's a certain amount of civility that used to be a part of flying on the airlines.
That's nostalgia. Keep it that way.
Well, but it had to do with pride, too, you know. And the
yeah.
people who flew with these airlines were proud of themselves. I mean, to this day, you know, you meet somebody who was a Pan Am flight attendant back in the 60s and 70s, or 50s, 60s and 70s, and that was a prestige job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and flying used to be an adventure, and it used to be fun. I remember when it was fun, damn it, you know.
Wow, Richard, they are cracking down. That's an airplane buzzing your house.
It is. Luckily, it's a seaplane, so if it goes down, it'll probably float.
Well, I'm glad you're back safe and sound and that your bags actually got back before you did.
Or I did, which is a first.
That is. Thanks for joining us today, Richard.
All righty, Peter. Take care.
And that's Richard Rappaport. Just whispered his name in case the authorities are listening. So, be careful if you decide to fly this summer. Allow lots of time, pack extra food, and bring some patience pills. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. You can visit our website where you can hear archived programs and catch our live stream weekdays 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific time. It's all there at peterbcollins.com.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A bomb plot uncovered in London.
What I want to do is to reassure Londoners that we're doing everything possible.
And protecting U.S. forces from roadside bombs.
We need to keep working on it and find ways to protect our soldiers and Marines.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammie McCormick. It was a chilling reminder of the London transit attacks of just 2 years ago. Today, British authorities discovered a Mercedes packed with fuel and nails rigged to explode in the busy theater district of London. It was discovered by an ambulance crew, which saw smoke coming from the Mercedes.
It is obvious that if the device had detonated, there could have been significant injury or loss of life.
Here's CBS News correspondent Richard Roth.
London woke up to a security clampdown, roadblocks and a fingertip search of tourist landmarks in case another bomb was planted nearby. And this afternoon they found one in a car that had been parked around the corner. It had been ticketed and towed overnight a mile and a half to Hyde Park, where the smell of gas fumes raised suspicion. It's clearly linked, police said, to the first car bomb.
There was a considerable amount of fuel and gas canisters. As in the first vehicle, there was also a substantial quantity of nails.
British anti-terror police chief Peter Clark.
The discovery of what appears to be a second bomb is obviously troubling and reinforces the need for the public to be alert.
Especially since officials aren't sure why the vehicles weren't detonated. Paul Wilkinson is with the Center for the Study of Terrorism.
It's certainly possible that there was a panic and that the operation went wrong.
I'm Mark Noller in Kennebunkport, Maine, where a spokesman says President Bush got a pretty detailed briefing about the situation in London, but has yet to call the new British Prime Minister Gordon Brown. Spokesman Tony Snow says Brown has his hands full and Mr. Bush doesn't want to be a distraction. But Snow says the U.S. is offering assistance to Britain through the FBI, CIA, and other agencies.
Now this.
Hi, Dave. It's Sarah. Hey, first thing tomorrow morning, a steel shelf on 12 is going to give way. You know, the one that stores all the toner. Yeah. Anyway, we'll give you a call when it breaks. Thanks.
In your job, you don't get warnings, so Grainger's just added a massive amount of shelving and storage products to help get you through whatever the day brings. We're adding products and removing problems. From shelves, bins, and cabinets to packaging, we have what you need to store just about anything. Call or visit your local branch or go online to Grainger.com. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Can you guess which state Michelin Man is in? Having left Utah, he's on the aptly named Loneliest Road. He'll drive vast distances without anything in sight, including a gas pump. That's why he has Michelin Hydro-Edge tires. As the longest-lasting, most fuel-efficient tires in their category, they're just right for lonely roads and high gas prices. For more on Hydro-Edge tires and to see which state Michelin Man is in, visit michelinman.com/guesswhere.
Michelin, a better way forward.
Category defined as premium-priced S&T passenger products.
In Iraq today, 5 American soldiers were killed and 7 wounded in what the military says was a sophisticated attack. Their convoy was first hit by a bomb, then they were attacked with small arms fire and rocket-propelled grenades. Defense Secretary Robert Gates says he wants to speed up production of new military vehicles, which would better protect soldiers.
Lives are at stake. For every month we delay, scores of young Americans are going to die.
A new CBS News poll finds more Americans than ever want troops to start coming home. Deputy Director of Survey Sarah Dutton.
More Americans than ever before say that the war is going either somewhat or very badly. That's 77%. Only 22% think it's going well now.
They never found any weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Today, the UN disbanded the weapons inspector teams that were looking for them. The weapon of choice of Democrats these days seems to be funding. Now, House Democrats are threatening to cut the president's budget for the Guantanamo Bay prison. And the Supreme Court says it will look into whether detainees there can challenge their imprisonment in court. Here's Barry Bagnato.
Less than 3 months after refusing to consider whether Guantanamo Bay detainees can challenge their detentions in federal court, the Supreme Court takes the unusual step of reversing itself.
It will assess what the rights of Guantanamo detainees are.
Jonathan Hafitz at the Brennan Center for Justice.
Individuals at Guantanamo have been held without meaningful review for more than 5 years.
The ACLU's Stephen Shapiro says attacks on the Bush administration's Guantanamo procedures have grown.
They're increasingly coming under criticism from military officials themselves who have been involved, and it's just become an embarrassment.
It'll likely be months before any high court ruling, perhaps years before any detainee challenges are settled. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
And you're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
There are two essentials for any summer getaway: a good sunscreen and a good set of tires. So visit your Goodyear retailer now and get up to a $50 cash card by mail-in offer with the purchase of a set of 4 select Goodyear tires. Or double your cash card up to $100 when purchased on your Goodyear credit card. Goodyear, get there. Offer valid 6/24 through 7/21/07. Go to GoodyearTires.com or see your participating Goodyear retailer for your mail-in form and complete details. Certain restrictions apply. Goodyear credit card purchase is subject to credit approval.
Aflac for Small Business, how can I help you?
Yeah, you cover small business?
Yes, we do.
Great, because I'm an ant.
Okay.
I got a tunneling business. You dig?
How many employees?
Well, it's a family-run business, just me and my aunts.
Well, with Aflac for Small Business, you can enjoy a lot of the benefits of a big business.
Great.
Just call 1-800-99-AFLAC.
Did that.
Or go to AflacSB.com. Aflac for Small Business, because small business needs...
Aflac!
Too.
Gotta run. Company picnic.
American Family Life Insurance Company of Columbus.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. This hour, we're going to talk about the torture. We're going to talk about the atrocities that occurred at Abu Ghraib prison near Baghdad and the lack of accountability to those truly responsible for this barbaric behavior.
A revolution never comes with a warning. A revolution never sends you an omen. A revolution just arrived like the morning. Ring the alarm, we come to wake up the snoring. They're telling you to never worry about the future. They're telling you to never worry about the torture.
Yeah, don't worry about the torture. These are really bad people.
Spend it all today and we will bill you tomorrow.
That's Michael Fronte and Spearhead. It's the title tune to a powerful, politically infused CD called Yell Fire.
TV commercial for a pop of pill culture. Drugs companies circling like a vulture. Amaraki babies with the G.I. Joe father. 10 years from now, is anybody gonna bother? Yell fire.
Tara McKelvey returns to our program today. She is a senior editor at the American Prospect and also a Marie Claire magazine contributing editor and a research fellow at NYU School of Law. That's in New York City. Is that the Brennan Center, Tara?
Actually, at the Center on Law and Security.
Oh, okay. And there are separate buildings and everything?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We spoke just the other day with Jonathan Haffetz from the Brennan Center,
sure,
who represents a number of the detainees at Guantanamo Bay and is a great advocate for the right of habeas corpus and other constitutional rights. You have a powerful new book out called Monstering, Inside America's Policy of Secret Interrogations and Torture in the Terror War. And I commend you for a lot of great reporting here. What made you choose the term monstering?
Well, it's a term that was used to describe a certain kind of interrogation that they were using in Afghanistan. There's a book written by Chris Mackey, and he describes it. And it's basically what happens is you have an interrogator and then a suspect, and they follow the same sort of brutal regimen. So if they decide the prisoner is not going to get enough sleep, the interrogator does the same thing. So they live parallel lives until one of them breaks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's a lovely concept. We put that up with the language like fear up?
Yeah, except the thing about monstering is it sounds horrible, but in some ways it's more humane than what was done in Iraq, certainly, because the person who's interrogating is undergoing the same treatment that the prisoner is.
Mm-hmm.
And according to some of the people I interviewed who had been held in Iraq, they were treated to some kind of like assembly line interrogation process.
Mm-hmm.
So once an interrogator got tired of beating the prisoner, another interrogator would take over.
Tara, give us a quick sketch of the reporting you did for this book, because it's clear to me that you went to great lengths to try to get first-person accounts and accounts from people who knew some of the individuals involved. You clearly went to Lindy England's hometown and Charlie Grainer's and some of the other people who were fingered at the lower levels for the atrocities at Abu Ghraib. How many trips did you make to Iraq?
I went to the Middle East to interview people, and
mm-hmm.
I met them in Amman, Jordan. The detainees who had been held at Abu Ghraib came over to Amman
uh-huh.
because they were possible plaintiffs in a lawsuit.
Okay. And so you didn't get to go to Abu Ghraib yourself?
I thought about it for a long time, and I was planning to go to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And then a friend of mine was killed by a suicide bomber. And so I thought twice about it.
Yeah, I can certainly understand. So let's start off with the history of Abu Ghraib. And in the second or third chapter of your book, you describe that this was a place where Saddam kept as many as 30,000 prisoners. And when the U.S. First developed a plan in the summer of 2003 to convert his hellhole to ours, you cite a coalition provisional authority officer here arguing against it, saying it's no different than going into Dachau and saying, we're going to use this as a prison facility. I think that's a very important point, and I remain stunned that we thought that we could not only convert that facility to an American detention center, but then we went forward oblivious to the symbolism and the significance of turning it into a torture center run by Americans.
Yeah, it seems pretty amazing that it happened. I think the people who first decided that they were going to use it as the main prison, they looked at it in terms of logistics. Like it had certain facilities that other places didn't have, or that and other places had sort of crumbled into the ground. So they saw it as an advantage that at least it was an intact facility, and plus it was centrally located so they could bring prisoners from all over Iraq into the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And they even mentioned these, you know, the dark history of the prison in some of their meetings and some of their papers. And there was some talk about erecting a memorial or something like that, but they never did that, and they never took seriously the legacy of Abu Ghraib.
Mm-hmm. Is it still open today?
There was talk of having it closed down and moving prisoners into other places. Some human rights advocates say that in some ways it would be worse because there were already people who had gotten lost in the system, and then transporting them somewhere else would like ensure that they've basically disappeared in terms of having their families being able to get in touch with them.
Mm-hmm. So it is still open.
I'm not sure of the latest thing, right? You know, of where we are with it right now.
Yeah. Now, Tara, you also describe in the book the population at various stages, and I want to focus on the year 2003 because that's when the grisly photographs were taken in the fall of 2003. The summer of 2003 is when we took control of Abu Ghraib and started detaining people there. In late August, early September of 2003, Jeffrey Miller, a general, was dispatched from Guantanamo to take a look at the situation at detention centers, including Abu Ghraib in Iraq. And that's when crap started to happen. And when we look at that time, I think it's important to remember a few things. One is that we had declared victory, that major combat operations had ended, and Bush had done his mission accomplished speech on the aircraft carrier off San Diego. And yet we had not captured Saddam. And this was, of course, we've never captured Osama. And this was a serious problem and an embarrassment to the United States, that we claimed we had toppled him and taken over his country, but we didn't have his body or his live person. And so I do believe that they were turning everything inside out in that entire country in a desperate effort to try to capture Saddam and some of his top officials who were at large at that time. What else would you add to the context of what ultimately did occur during the fall of 2003 at Abu Ghraib?
Well, I think, I mean, that's a really good description of what was happening. And I think you can look at Abu Ghraib as a microcosm of that. They had this sense that the people, the American soldiers who were there, had this sense of panic because of the attacks that were around them. One of the reasons that Abu Ghraib was a bad idea for the main prison is that it was in the middle of a Sunni stronghold. So they were getting attacked. There were, you know, IEDs. There were mortar attacks. They were, you know, two soldiers were killed in the fall of 2003. So the soldiers themselves were in great danger, both from being assaulted from the outside and also from within, because the prisoners were not being treated well. They were, you know, some of them were basically starving, and many of them died in August and September because of the lack of medical treatment. So they were, the soldiers who were there were being threatened with riots and so on. So the American experience in Iraq at that point was at a crisis, and it was as though we hadn't prepared for these things. We didn't expect them. We didn't expect the violent reaction against Americans, and so all of us took us by surprise.
And as you point out, General Karpinski, who doesn't come off real well in your book, and, you know, in hindsight, it appears that she was left as the fall girl, if you will, for many of the problems that occurred. But it seems that she was ineffectual even before she got big-footed by Jeffrey Miller. And she was overwhelmed by National Guard and reservists who had no training, with the exception of Ivan Frederick and Charlie Grainer, who were prison guards back before they left the United States. Most of the people who were running the prison had no experience. They were working 12-hour shifts. They were extremely overloaded. And the, you know, simple things like the electricity didn't work. So this was a very difficult situation, even before you get into the harsh interrogation techniques.
That's right. It was really a catastrophe. You know, it was just a situation that was spilling out of control, even in August and September. And Janice Karpinski is kind of a complicated character. I like her very much, personally. I really have enjoyed spending time with her. And it is true that she had 17 different prison facilities that she was overseeing. So she was busy running all around Iraq trying to check on things in each of these prisons. On the other hand, the abuse was so well known. It was the worst-kept secret at Abu Ghraib. You know, for instance, Luciana Spencer, one of the soldiers there, she testified to Major Takuba in the Takuba report that one of the computers had a screensaver that showed the picture of the human pyramid that was one of these horrible Abu Ghraib photographs.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really something that was hidden from view, but Janice Karpinski apparently didn't. She told me, and she seems completely honest when, you know, when she's telling her story. I have no reason to doubt the truth of what she's saying, that she wasn't aware of the abuses that were taking place.
We're talking with writer Tara McKelvey, McKelvey. Spell it so you can Google her name and find the book Monstering, Inside America's Policy of Secret Interrogations and Torture in the Terror War. It's out in hardcover right now. And she's with us this entire hour, so if you have a question or a comment, give us a call. We're going to talk about the recent article by Seymour Hersh in The New Yorker about General Takuba's investigation of Abu Ghraib and what it earned him, and a lot of other issues, too. So if you have a question or a comment, call us now, toll-free, at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And we, as we go to a break, Our music is by The Cure, and this one is called Pictures of You. Why don't we dedicate this to Charlie Grainer and Lindy England, the lovebirds of Abu Ghraib.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Okay, you want a website? What next? A lot of people can do the job, but you want innovation at a reasonable price. You want Dale Edward. Dale builds amazing websites with streaming video. Being a pro photographer ensures high-quality content. Websites, wedding, and special events photography, all at a reasonable price. Go to DaleEdward.com or call 277-9847. That's 277-9847.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Hey, let's take a look at the traffic here in America, or in Monterey, Salinas area, in Santa Cruz. Let's take a look at what the CHP is telling us. Well, we do have a problem. It's northbound 101 at Soledad. It's an injury crash, actually a non-injury crash. This one just coming in from CHP. Not a lot of details at this point, other than that we have a two-car crash on the right-hand shoulder. Highway 1 at Pajaro. We do have a crash being reported there. This is a vehicle into the center divide area. Getting word of a problem in Santa Cruz is northbound Highway 1 at Highway 17. It's a two-vehicle crash, everything off to the right-hand shoulder. Report of a fire northbound 101 at 129. This is east of the freeway. Smoke being reported in the hills. This report brought to you by Toyota. Toyota, the cars people rely on for fuel efficiency than any other vehicle. Go to your Toyota dealer today.
The Peter B. Collins Show continues, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. We're talking with Tara McKelvey. Her new book is Monstering, Inside America's Policy of Secret Interrogations and Torture in the Terror War. Lots of detail about what really happened at Abu Ghraib in Iraq, particularly in that crucial year, the fall of 2003, and then as it was exposed during the election year in 2004. And the book includes a lead blurb from a friend of the Peter B. Collins Show, James Bamford. And he writes, Tara is an extraordinarily gifted writer, and Monstering is an extraordinary book. The most troubling revelation is not that there are monsters, but they look like you and me. That's quite a statement from Jim. Let's take a call. Dave's on the line from Eureka. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Tara, I think you guys are already moving in the direction of my question, but the administration kind of wanted to make us believe that this was all the work of a couple of very low-level non-commissioned officers. And did you in your travels discover that that was perhaps not completely accurate?
Shall I answer now?
Yes, go right ahead, Sarah.
Uh-huh. It's a very good question. I think that there's been a tendency to sort of blame one side or the other. There's been a tendency among administration officials, certainly, to blame seven bad apples. You know, a few people who were in Tier 1A at Abu Ghraib, which is where those photographs were taken, as sort of, you know, criminal elements that happened to be there at the time. There's also a tendency to blame administration officials or high-ranking government officials for the abuse that took place, as sort of saying that these people at the very top were ordering abusive techniques to be used on the prisoners. And I think that the scandal happened, that, you know, the abuse took place because of these two worlds came together. There was a meshing of these two cultures that took place, and that's what resulted in the abuse of the prisoners at Abu Ghraib.
And so do you think, or do you want to find out, if Donald Rumsfeld personally approved these, not just the policies, but the specific techniques that were used?
There were a set of guidelines that were used for interrogations, and they included various things like dietary manipulation, meaning that they would withhold food from the prisoners. They included sleep deprivation, which, of course, means
boom,
awake.
And boom boxes with Twisted Sister 24/7. Mm-hmm.
Right. It was. I mean, I did try to find out exactly what songs were played there. I was really curious about that. And then they also used things like stress positions.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these things sound benign. Stress positions doesn't sound particularly horrible. Basically, it means that they put a person in an uncomfortable position, and then they are allowed to keep them in that uncomfortable position for 45 minutes. So, for instance, I saw a photograph of a prisoner who was squatting in a chair backwards on one of those plastic lawn chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can give them a break and then put them in another position. The reality is the stress position also meant things like what was known as a Palestinian hanging, which is where they shackled their arms from behind and held them from cell bars. And one of the prisoners named Jamadi died while being hung in that position.
Mm-hmm.
These were things that were approved by, you know, highest-ranking military officials. And Rumsfeld signed off on many of these interrogation techniques. And Janice Karpinski has testified that she saw one of these guidelines, one of these lists of things that could be used under certain conditions in Tier 1A, where those photos were taken.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was signed by Rumsfeld. And then, according to Karpinski, there were block letters written in his handwriting that said, make sure this happens.
Well, I've heard a report about that memo. Dave, did you have a follow-up?
Well, I was just wondering if any of the people you talked to said that while this was going on, any colonels or generals had happened to drop in.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Go ahead, Tara.
I heard the first part of the question.
He wanted to know if any generals or high-ranking officials actually were there observing these techniques being used.
Nobody told me that. Not that I've heard.
Okay. And just about a minute till we go to a break, Tara. One of the interesting things that I learned first from your book is that Lindy England and Charlie Grainer had an affair before they were dispatched to Iraq. That stateside, they met when they were both, I guess, at training or in some sort of preliminary reporting. And you describe, and it seemed gratuitous at first, but then when England reports that, you know, Charlie Grainer was a wild guy who always wanted to take pictures, and you talk about a little vacation trip they took with another guy to the beach where she was performing sex acts on Grainer while they took turns taking pictures, and I guess the other guy passed out at some point. You know, these kinds of behaviors and the idea of taking digital photographs of them actually preceded their posting at Abu Ghraib.
Yeah, there were a whole series of events that took place before they were deployed that would have raised a red flag for, you know, for most people. But they seemed to go pretty much unpunished. For instance, starting from their very meeting, you know, Lindy England was processing Charles Grainer's paperwork, which is how they met. And she used to go out to the smoking area, and he would follow her out there, even though he didn't smoke, because he wanted to flirt with her and talk with her. And they had an affair, and according to Army regulations, since Lindy England was married, that was against the rules.
Yeah, and if either one of them had been gay, don't ask, don't tell, would have drummed him right out of the service.
We'll
pick up there as we continue.
Sure.
Kara McKelvey is with us here. The book is called Monstering. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Franklin Templeton Investments, providing a unique perspective to investors for over 50 years. Franklin Templeton Investments, gained from their perspective. I'm Charles Osgood. In the journal Science, the research team in Halifax, Nova Scotia, is predicting that in 40 years or so, people will not be eating seafood. Not because we will have found out that eating fish isn't good for you, but because there won't be any. They say if present trends of overfishing and pollution continue, the populations of just about all seafood face collapse by the year 2048. More after this.
Reason number 9 to switch to Geico. There's nothing sweeter than saving money on car insurance. It's one of those rare opportunities in life where you can thumb your nose at the system and say, "Okay, system, listen up. I just got a better deal with Geico. Great savings, personal service 24/7, and the latest in online technology." Of course, the system may sulk for a day or two, but you're going to feel a lot better.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice then. Now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333, we'll name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift package. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333. That's 800-282-3333 for the hottest gift.
The team of ecologists and economists predicting the collapse of virtually all seafood species, collapse in their vocabulary meaning decline in the catch of 90%, say that at this point 29% of fish and seafood species have already collapsed. And says the study's lead author, Boris Worm of Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia, it is a very clear trend and it is accelerating. If he and his colleagues are correct in their projections, it will be disastrous for our species. Because for more than a billion people on this planet, most of whom are poor, fish is their main source of protein. 200 million people depend on fishing for their livelihoods, according to Joshua Rickards of the private Pew Charities Trust Environment Program. Worldwide fishing provides $80 billion in revenue. The Seafood Industries Trade Association, the National Fisheries Institute, pooh-poohs the study in a statement that says fish stocks naturally fluctuate in population, and by developing new technologies that capture target species more efficiently, we are helping to ensure that our industry does not adversely affect surrounding ecosystems or damage native species. And the research report, grim as it is, does say it is not too late to turn this around. They say it can be done, but it must be done soon, but requires a big chunk of political will to do it. The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue our conversation about Abu Ghraib and other related issues. Writer Tara McKelvey is with us. And lines are open if you'd like to talk with us at 888-5-PETER-B. You dial 1-888-573-8372. Her book is called Monstering, Inside America's Policy of Secret Interrogations and Torture in the Terror War. It's out in hardcover from Carroll and Graf Publishers. And Tara, I had to stop you before the break because I can't control when the break comes. And you wanted to fill in a little bit more about the pre-Iraq relationship between Charlie Grainer and Lindy England.
They met when she was processing this paperwork. They went off on a vacation together. They spent the weekend in Virginia Beach, like you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
and they took off all these pictures that you described.
Well, and let me, I'll just read this passage from your book so that people understand, and I'm not trying to be salacious here, but it really does lay the background for some of these incredible photos that Lindy England participated in at Abu Ghraib. You write, they went, England went with Grainer and another soldier to Virginia Beach. Their friend took a picture of England performing oral sex on Grainer. In addition, Grainer took a series of pictures as they engaged in anal sex, showing the progression of the sex act minute by minute. Grainer photographed England as she placed her nipple in the ear of their friend, who had by that time passed out in a hotel room. And Grainer was photographed as he exposed himself near their friend's head while he was asleep in the room. So these kinds of, outrageous, crude sexual behaviors were in practice between these two before they left. And then you report, incredibly, that the loving couple rented a car, drove to eastern Kentucky to meet the family, and at one point Lindy asked Grainer to show the Virginia Beach pictures to her dad?
I mean, when I first heard about this part of the story, I just couldn't believe it. But basically what happened is they went down to Kentucky to meet with her parents, and her parents were there on a turkey hunting trip. And they, Lindy did say something along the lines of, you know, why don't you show the pictures? It seemed at that point that she just meant, like, regular pictures, the kind of pictures you take on a, you know, weekend in Virginia Beach, showing the beach, you know, whatever, walking to the restaurant to have dinner.
Look at that sunrise, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. So Grainer handed this packet of photographs to Lindy England's father. He opened them and then kind of went silent, according to the, you know, stories that were, you know, told to me by people who were there, and then handed them over to Lindy England's mom and said, you might not want to show these to your dad. And then these pictures that were shown to the parents were actually the obscene pictures, the raunchy ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if Grainer did that on purpose, like, you know, see what I'm going to do now? You know, look what I'm going to do. Look how far I can go with this,
mm-hmm.
or whether it was an accident or whatever. But that's what happened in Kentucky.
Well, and this suggests, to just be accurate, that Grainer is a misogynist who took great pleasure in dominating Lindy England, and she seemed to be submissive in a manner that you know, created a dyad.
Yeah, these things are very complicated. I mean, pictures like that can be taken, and they can be totally fine and playful and or whatever. They can be, you know, part of a relationship that's very loving. It's not clear at all what was going on with them at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
It can also be, like Lindy England's lawyer said, her civilian lawyer said, it can be a way of showing that he has power over her and that not only is he going to have her engage in these sex acts, he's going to photograph them and then he's going to take those pictures and show them to her dad. And what, you know, what way can you possibly think of that would humiliate or, you know, upset your girlfriend in that?
And then fast forward to Abu Ghraib and to the comments that England made in the courts martial afterward. She said that, you know, she didn't really want to participate in those pictures. But as you describe it, at one point she and Charlie had just had sex and then came out and she posed with her thumbs up in front of a naked detainee showing his private parts. And was that the same time frame as the famous stack of detainees, naked detainees, who were told to simulate masturbation as their pictures were taken?
I'm not sure of the exact sequence. I think also it's important to remember that this stuff was going on before and that there was a pattern. They were, you know, Grainer was taking pictures of them and these sex acts and then was distributing the pictures, not only to her parents but also to other people in the army. And nobody said anything about it. It just, I mean, or maybe there was like sort of he was chastised for it, something like that. But there were no punishments really that were doled out for the stuff that was going on. And then Grainer would sort of continually up the ante. You know, once they got to Iraq, they started doing photographs again. And many of them were the same pictures that they took in Virginia Beach. They were very similar, except once they got to Abu Ghraib, Linda England would add a flourish, which was a thumbs-up sign.
Mm-hmm. And they also were having wild parties. They couldn't get alcohol, so they were using cough syrup and some kind of a pharmaceutical to get into a tripping state?
Yeah, there was a set of guys who were there, and some girls were involved in this stuff. And I was given a series of homemade videos of the party room. And this was at Abu Ghraib at the same time when the pictures were being taken. And it showed these soldiers, they would do what they call robo-tripping, which is they would take Robitussin and chug it down, and then they would chase it with, like, say, two Vivarin tablets.
Mm-hmm. And what is with Vivarin? I've never had that.
You know, it's like an upper, you know, it's like caffeine.
Okay.
So the
mm-hmm.
combination makes it feel like you're on acid or like you're tripping or you're totally high.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do this stuff, and they would play rave music, or they would play Outkast, or they would play mystical lyrics, and they would do lots of, like, really freaky things in this party room.
And I'm into music a little bit, so talk a little bit about this. Outkast, the Hey Ya song about Polaroid picture, that was in the top 10 at Abu Ghraib?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I really like about your show is the music. I think it's really, really good. And I think that music is a really important part of people's lives, and you see it in the Abu Ghraib story. The photographs or the videotapes from these party rooms, there was always music playing. And it was kind of random. It was usually what was playing on the radio at the time. You know, as near as I could tell, it wasn't like a strong drive for Outkast. It's just like that's what you heard during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that one song, Shake It Like a Polaroid, it's like a great song.
Yeah, it is. I love it.
Yeah, it's a really good song. And so they would have that in the background, or they would have, you know, and you could sort of hear lyrics sometimes for like that mystical song they would play a lot. And then they would act out these various, you know, scenarios.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of adult supervision was there? If these kind of, you know, rave parties driven by cough medicine and uppers, you know, it really appears that there was nobody keeping tabs on these people.
In fact, the people that were involved in this party room, they were, according to the person who gave me the images and the videos, they were put in charge of a special guard force. So they were in charge of escorting the detainees from their cells to the interrogation sites. So they had a position of some responsibility, or at least mm-hmm. were in charge of handling detainees. When they didn't exactly show, like, you know, outstanding success in the classroom, when they were studying the handling of detainees, and they certainly weren't, you know, stellar workers when they were on their off hours.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with writer Tara McKelvey here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Daniel joins us from Santa Cruz. Welcome, Daniel. You're on the air.
Thank you, Peter B. Yeah, I'm not surprised at all by what happened to Abu Ghraib. I mean, the CIA was doing all this stuff with the extraordinary rendition before Iraq War. They did it with the Egyptian Arabs. But it seems like the fact that these were Muslims has a lot to do with the nonchalant attitude of the guards and the way that they weren't really considered human beings. I was wondering if your guest has anything to say about that.
Okay, thank you, Daniel. Go ahead, Tara.
I think part of the reason that these things happened, that they were allowed to happen, is that there was a dehumanization process. The prisoners, if you look at the pictures, if you think about the pictures, the prisoners are hooded, right? They're not... They're like their identity is stripped away from them. Their names weren't used. Most of them were given nicknames because the guards couldn't pronounce their Arabic names. And the fact that they had a family or that they had a previous life before they ended up at that prison was completely erased. And so somehow that made it easier to turn them into animals and to treat them like animals.
Tell us the story about General Zabar and his son.
During the fall of 2003, there was an Iraqi general who was held prisoner there. And apparently American troops and intelligence officers thought that he had important information to reveal. So one way they tried, according to the person I spoke to, Sam Provence, one way that they used to get this general to speak was to mistreat his son. His son was a teenager and apparently knew nothing and had done nothing, but was stripped and mistreated in different ways, and it was always made clear to his father what was happening to him.
And at a certain point, did the father break?
Sam Provence said that, according to the people he talked to, that the father broke down. And at this point, or even around that time, it was a real crisis for Sam Provence, who was watching this happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he joined the Army because he thought it was represented courage and bravery and certainly virtue in many different ways in protecting America and our values, and what he saw there went against everything that he believed in.
And, Tara, when we think of this example of General Zabar as just one of the high-value detainees in Abu Ghraib, is there any question whatsoever that the Geneva Conventions covered his detention?
The Geneva Conventions protect prisoners of war, and the many of the administration officials had sort of different ideas about what the Geneva Conventions were. They, you know, sort of said that they didn't apply to al-Qaeda and Taliban suspects or, you know, people like that.
I understand that, but General Zabar was a member of the Iraqi army, was a Ba'athist, and was he not accorded, or should he not have been accorded, the full rights under the Geneva Conventions?
There's no question that everyone in Iraq was protected by Geneva Conventions.
Mm-hmm. And the population at Abu Ghraib, General Zabar, was an anomaly. Most of the people who were there are described as people who were just swept up off the streets. And some of this was the confusion that Americans didn't know who was who to trust, who had done what. And so it was easier just to, you know, grab a group of people or whoever they could find and try to sort it out later.
That's right. I mean, according to the October 2003 International Committee of the Red Cross report, between 70-90% of the people who were there had no intelligence value whatsoever, meaning they didn't have any information that would be of interest to the Americans. And it wasn't just the Red Cross that said that. There were individuals with military units from the, you know, from the 470th unit, 519th unit, and others that said that these detainees had nothing to say.
Mm-hmm. Now, you referenced a moment ago the legal discussions that took place in the White House and other government offices after September 11th. John Yoo, who is now a law professor at UC Berkeley, Jay Bybee, who got a lifetime appointment to try to tilt the Ninth Circuit Court a little to the right, they were two of the key architects. But Alberto Gonzalez was really a central player, was he not, in the articulation of these new and nuanced policies about defining torture in a manner that permitted these atrocious acts and permitted them to say, well, that's not really torture.
I spent a lot of time talking on the phone with one of Gonzalez's deputies, a man named Timothy Flanagan, and Flanagan had been involved with those discussions about what types of interrogations should be allowed. And they certainly looked at legal definitions of torture and what should be permitted for these interrogations. But I never spoke with Gonzalez. I'm not sure what he's like as an individual.
Well, he has a really bad memory.
That I got. But talking to Flanagan was doing these things because he believed it was in the best interest of America. He thought this was a way to protect our nation from another attack. He never intended for these things to be used in Iraq. That's not an excuse for what happened, but that is what he says. He did it, you know, he believed he was on the side of the angels, that he was doing the right thing for this country.
Well, he thought the policy was being devised for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or Osama bin Laden, not for just some average Iraqi who got, entrapped and sent to Abu Ghraib.
Exactly. That's right.
We've got to take a break, and then we'll return for another segment with Tara McKelvey. Her book is called Monstering, and I recommend it to you. A lot of interesting new information about what happened at Abu Ghraib in Baghdad. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
We were looking for an inclusive community, so we joined a Unitarian Universalist church where we can really live our values.
Did you know the American Red Cross, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, and the SPCA were all founded by Unitarians or Universalists?
Imagine a denomination that walks its talk. When Martin Luther King Jr. appealed to clergy to join protesters in Selma, Alabama, more than one-third of the Unitarian Universalist parish ministers answered his call.
And Unitarian Universalists are still fighting for justice today. We're speaking up everywhere for marriage equality, for reproductive rights, for the environment, and for our civil liberties.
A denomination with progressive values makes a difference in today's world. Unitarian Universalists. Come visit our church on the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website, uucmp.org, or call 624-7404.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
Hey everybody, let's take a look at the latest TGIF traffic. Let's take a look at an injury crash on Monterey Highway 1 at Pajaro. It looks like this is a, they're saying this is southbound 1, actually, before Salinas Road. They've changed the location on this. It's a pickup truck and a VW Bug blocking the left lane. It looks like three vehicles involved, another vehicle off to the shoulder, and paramedics and fire department on scene there, as you might imagine. Meanwhile, we're also going to take a look at another problem. This is a report of a fire northbound 101 at 129, and it's east of the freeway. Apparently, smoke can be seen from the roadway there. And another crash at northbound 101 at Soledad. A two-vehicle accident is off to the right-hand shoulder there, and CHP is on scene. No problems report on Highway 17. This report brought to you by Hyundai.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. My guest is Tara McKelvey. Her new book is called Monstering. It's all about Abu Ghraib and our illegal detention and interrogation policies.
There's so much hatred, war and poverty.
And we're joined by John in Carmel Valley. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
Peter, you and your listeners know that I can be pretty critical of many religious practices, and yet I have a major religious faith of my own, and I'm pretty conventional in some of my praying methods. I actually got my prayer list notion from my era of being nearly a fundamentalist, and it not only includes nearly everybody who I've ever known alive or dead. That my praying for the dead comes from my Catholic period.
Mm-hmm.
But when I have geographical areas, it's this thing now is so complex and takes me so long. But when I get to Iraq, I have many things I add or say about surrounding countries like even Afghanistan, but when I get to Iraq, it's so painful to even think about what's going on there that I have this simple prayer, which is, may God forgive us, this country in particular, for what's been happening, and may the Iraqis forgive us. And that's all I can say. It's just, I just cannot go in any other direction, because right now I can hardly, my brain just goes blank. It's too painful.
Well, thank you for a heartfelt comment. And Tara, just in your view, how long will it take for people to forget what we did at Abu Ghraib?
Well, I think a lot of Americans already have. I don't think that's a problem in this country. It's different in the Middle East. I mean, if you look at the polls, America was already in pretty bad standing, and it was March of 2004. A Pew poll showed that U.S. prestige in the world had dropped to its lowest point in 5 decades. But still, in Iraq, there was a lot of optimism about what was going to happen, and about 63% of the Iraqis supported the American invasion. That was according to a coalition provisional authority poll. 3 weeks after Abu Ghraib, only 9% did. So I think that the Abu Ghraib scandal is, you know, it wasn't just a problem of a prison. I mean, it was a blow to American prestige. It was a blow to our image, and it's something that we're going to be dealing with for generations.
Yeah. What did you take away from the recent Seymour Hersh New Yorker article that was focused largely around General Tacuba? It's Toguba. I don't know why I get that in there. Toguba. What happened to him after he conducted a fair investigation that was limited to people, colonel or below?
Well, I mean, I've spent a lot of time reading the documents and the military investigations, and there have been 12 investigations conducted by the military into detainee abuse. And Toguba's report is striking because it's really honest. He talks about what he describes as a conspiracy, or what's described in the report as a conspiracy of silence at the prison, which meant that there were these things going on, and somehow people knew about it, but still nobody did anything about it for a very long time. And it was the first report into the detainee abuse, and it was the last one that really exposed things for what they were. So in some ways, it's not surprising that Toguba suffered some kind of fallout from his reporting. He tried to tell the truth.
And he was shunned, and ultimately they forced him to retire early.
Right. He describes like this mafia-like behavior that he ran into in Washington about, you know, the way people treated him. And he experienced some of the same stuff that the whistleblowers had told me, which is that they really believed in the Army, and they joined because they thought it was, you know, an amazing institution. And they were so disappointed when it turned out not to be that way.
In your book, you have a chapter called OGA, Other Government Agencies. And many of us are aware that contractors were used. They were hired in some cases as translators, but they ended up being interrogators. And others were hired as interrogators. They were from CACI and some of the other defense contractors with various types of people, including mercenaries in Iraq. And I'm curious if you think they will ever be properly exposed and held accountable for their roles in the atrocities at Abu Ghraib.
Well, I mean, if you look at what's happened in the past, I mean, they, according to the latest Army census, there's about 100,000 contractors operating in Iraq. And there has been only one contractor who has been prosecuted for a violent crime, and he was actually in Afghanistan. So either all of those contractors have been angels, or there's been a lack of accountability.
Well, did Toguba's investigation cover contractors?
Yes, Toguba talks about the contractors. He's very critical of the things that they did and of their performance at the prison. They've also been cited in the Faye Jones investigation into the detainee abuse. And the conclusions were basically that many of them were not trained for their jobs in a proper way, that they didn't know enough about the Geneva Conventions, and they also were not properly screened.
The other day, Joe Galloway, who is a distinguished military correspondent for the McClatchy Papers, was on our program. He's calling for a new investigation into Abu Ghraib, and General Toguba has likewise said that we don't know the whole story. Do you think we'll ever learn everything that happened?
I think it's going to take a very long time. I mean, one approach that the government has taken has been to put out report after report after report. In some ways, it's been a blizzard of information about the detainee abuses, but still trying to figure out what the real story is very, very hard.
And ultimately, do you think Rumsfeld will escape responsibility?
Who knows? I mean, as time passes, more things come out about what happened in these prisons, and who knows?
Okay, I think that's quite fair. Well, Tara, I want to thank you for an excellent book. As I said, I learned quite a bit of new information about something that I've been following since it was first exposed back in 04. I think you've done a great service, and I hope that the renewed interest that is coming from Cy Hirsch's article and other quarters will direct more people to your book.
Thank you so much. I really like your show a lot. It was really an honor to be on it.
Oh, well, thank you. Tara McKelvey. The book is Monstering, Inside America's Policy of Secret Interrogations and Torture in the Terror War. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. You can catch our archives, listen to the live stream when it works, and see a picture of your humble host, all at the website peterbcollins.com. This program is produced by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is taking your calls today. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Karen Riegel. Scotland Yard is trying to figure out who left two Mercedes loaded with fuel and nails and set to explode in the center of London. The first was spotted by a clubgoer who noticed smoke drifting from a Mercedes sedan. CBS News correspondent Richard Roths in London.
What may be the richest source of clues now is video evidence from the network of security cameras that covers central London. It is as extensive as anywhere in the world. And police are poring over pictures now that ought to be able to help them track the movements of the cars and their drivers.
Here in the U.S., security's been upped in potential targets like the New York subway system.
U.S. officials say they are not raising the terror threat level, but the FBI now has sent out a nationwide alert, warning police and citizens to watch for suspicious cars and be extra vigilant over the upcoming July 4th holiday.
That's CBS News correspondent Bob Orr. Five more U.S. troops are dead in Iraq, killed by insurgents in Baghdad. More and more Americans, meantime, don't think the war in Iraq is going well. Steve Futterman has that.
Americans continue to be pessimistic about the war.
More Americans say that the war is going either somewhat or very badly.
That's CBS News Deputy Director of Survey Sarah Dutton. In the poll, 77% say the war is not going well.
These are some of the most negative and pessimistic responses that we've recorded yet to this question.
40% now want all troops removed. As far as where the country is going,
only 19% of Americans think the country is now headed in the right direction.
And President Bush receives only a 27% approval rating, the lowest ever for the CBS News poll. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
President Bush is declaring disaster areas in several north and central Texas counties. Reporter Pauline Chow tells us the storms aren't over yet.
For many Texans along the flood zone, the call for evacuations turned into a personal standoff.
Everything I own's right here. I ain't leaving.
Among the dozens of high water rescues across the state, four children had to be pulled from their grandparents' house in Horseshoe Bend.
Grammy said that there was more water coming, so we had to leave.
And it was kind of scary because my grandparents killed about five snakes.
One of the big fears today is that authorities will have to open up a fourth floodgate at a reservoir already over capacity. That will take the pressure off upstream, but things will only get worse downstream.
Some people evacuated from wildfire danger in South Lake Tahoe, California, are being allowed to return home, if only for a little while, to see where their homes once stood. A massive wildfire there has been 70% contained. Movie critic Joel Siegel is dead. His last day at ABC's Good Morning America was 2 weeks ago. Siegel died of colon cancer. He was just 63 years old. The Dow closed down 13.66. It ended the week at 13,408. The Nasdaq was down 5 points, closing at 2,603. This is CBS News.
Reason number 13 to switch to Geico. Everybody else is doing it. Now we know that logic never won an argument with your mom, especially when you were lobbying for that BB gun. You could put an eye out or something. But when it comes to car insurance, joining the crowd could be a good thing. Last year, more than 3 million drivers switched to Geico for savings, round-the-clock service, and the latest in online technology. Yep, millions switched, and nobody put a single eye out.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Can you guess which state Michelin Man is in? Having left Utah, he's on the aptly named Loneliest Road. He'll drive vast distances without anything in sight, including a gas pump. That's why he has Michelin Hydro-Edge tires. As the longest-lasting, most fuel-efficient tires in their category, they're just right for lonely roads and high gas prices. For more on HydroEdge tires and to see which state Michelin Man is in, visit michelinman.com/guesswhere.
Michelin, a better way forward.
Category defined as premium-priced S&T passenger products.
A new twist in the deaths of a wrestler, his wife, and son. Correspondent Steve Kathan has the story.
14 hours before police discovered the bodies of wrestler Chris Benoit, someone edited his Wikipedia entry to say he missed a match because of the death of his wife. Wikipedia says it was made by someone using an Internet Protocol address in Stamford, Connecticut. That's where World Wrestling Entertainment is based. The WWE says it has no knowledge of anyone there having information before the bodies were found. It is known Benoit sent text messages before killing himself, but apparently after killing his wife and son. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
More corn has been planted this year than any year since World War II. Corn's in pretty high demand, especially since the idea of biofuels began to catch on. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says farmers planted almost 93 million acres of corn this year. That's 19% more than last year. I'm Karen Riegel, CBS News.
Hi, Dave. It's Sarah. Hey, first thing tomorrow morning, a steel shelf on 12 is going to give way. You know, the one that stores all the toner. Yeah. Anyway, we'll give you a call when it breaks. Thanks.
In your job, you don't get warnings. So Grainger's just added a massive amount of shelving and storage products to help get you through whatever the day brings. We're adding products and removing problems. From shelves, bins, and cabinets to packaging, we have what you need to store just about anything. Call or visit your local branch or go online to Grainger.com. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Remember the 70s? Disco, bad hair, and long lines at the gas station. Well, some in Congress want to bring them back with 1970s-style energy taxes and price controls proven to produce gas shortages and long lines at the pump. We need reliable energy supplies, not failed policies from a bygone era. Tell Congress to leave energy taxes and gasoline price controls where they belong, back in the 70s.
Paid for by the people of America's oil and natural gas industry.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
I happen to think election protection is a very important issue, a fundamental issue for our democracy. And that's why every week we set aside an hour to talk about election issues. And our point person is Brad Friedman. He's the operator of bradblog.com, a citizen journalist who has been working hard on these issues for far too long. I think Brad feels that way.
Indeed, I do.
And he provides a great service trying to bring us news, information, and analysis about critical issues related to our right to vote, to have every vote counted, and to restore credibility in our election process, which has seriously deteriorated over the last few years. And Brad joins us today from Hotlanta, where he is attending and participating in the U.S. Social Forums. What's going on there, Brad?
Hotlanta, indeed. It's quite amazing. There's anywhere from 10 to 15,000 folks here, workshops and panels of all sorts going on all weekend long, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We had a I'm down here essentially representing VelvetRevolution.us. We had a terrific media reform panel that I led this morning on being the media and the blogging revolution. Had had a friend of yours, Bob Vitrakis from the Press, and had who else did we have? Matthew Cardinale from the Atlanta Progressive News, which is a great independent newspaper out here. Had some other folks as well who talked about blogging and all manners of being the media and taking taking what we do at the independent level up to the mainstream and challenging those guys. So that was great. We had an election panel yesterday on election reform. So a lot of good stuff. And earlier in the week had a very interesting summit at the Carter Center, of all places.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll ask you about that a little bit later in the hour, and you can give us a little bit more of a report. I have some things to tell you about. In quick summation, Rush Holt has yet to return my phone call. I even dropped Bob Edgar's name as instructed, but so far, silence from Congressman Holt's office. And also Secretary of State in California, Deborah Bowen, was on our program the other day, and she is not supporting the Holt Bill, H.R. 811. And with that said, I want to bring on our guest, Lawrence Norden, Larry Norden, who is from the Brennan Center at New York University. He serves as counsel to their democracy program. And we're going to have a discussion here about various aspects of the Holt Bill, H.R. 811, and go back and forth between Brad and Larry and get an understanding of some of the outstanding issues that we're still working through. Larry Norden, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Peter, thanks for having me on.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I had a chance to meet your executive director, Michael Waldman, a couple of weeks ago at the Take Back America conference, and also your colleague Jonathan Haffetz has been on our program a number of times. So I'm pleased to meet you, and I thank you for joining us. And I want to start off by saying that I believe that both of you gentlemen have the same goals in mind, and that we want to have an election process in this country that is credible and transparent, and that we're fighting for the same goals. There are some disagreements about the means, and in particular, whether the Rush Holt Bill, H.R. 811, really deals with the outstanding issues that we believe are on the table. So, Larry Norden, knowing that legislation is not perfect, what is it that leads you to, on balance, favor the current version of H.R. 811?
Well, you make a very good point in saying that legislation isn't perfect, and I've done a fair amount of work in Washington over the past few years with bills, and I've never seen a bill that I could say I have no problems with. But what this bill does, and you know, we have a book that's just come out on voting system vulnerabilities, and identifies some key things that need to be done. And again, this bill, while not perfect, does some very important things to make sure that voting is more reliable and secure in the future. Most basically, it bans paperless DREs, which are the touchscreen machines that most people know about and are concerned about.
Yeah.
It requires a paper trail for all of those machines. It requires some kind of voter-verified paper record. It requires a very strict auditing procedure. Paper by itself is not going to solve the security problems with these voting machines. If you're not using the paper in some way to check the electronic tally, then you're not going to have any more security. Paper by itself isn't going to prevent software bugs or programming errors that you're liable to have on these machines, no matter what kind of protections you take. And this bill will require, I think, more in a more stringent way than anything I've seen in any state, jurisdictions to use paper to check the electronic record.
Mm-hmm.
It also bans most wireless components on voting systems, and very importantly, it ends what the current practice is for testing these machines. Right now, we've got a real problem in the United States with the entire process for testing voting systems. And one of the key problems is that vendors themselves choose the so-called independent testing authorities that certify them, that say that they've met federal guidelines, and they pay them directly. Not surprisingly, this has created some conflicts of interest, and we have many examples of voting machines being certified when they shouldn't have been, when they, in fact, they did not comply with federal guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And taking this process out of the hands of vendors and saying that they don't get to choose who tests them, and that the vendors don't have to think when they're testing them, where is my next business coming from, is a huge step. So
okay,
are a few of the main reasons that I support the bill.
Okay, I understand. Sounds, Brad, like you weren't able to hear Larry. Is that
no,
right?
No, I wasn't. It's just the absolute faintest buzz in the background. I could not hear him at all.
Okay, have I fixed it now? Larry, talk a little bit.
Can you hear me now, Brad?
No, I can barely. I can't. I think you said, "How you doing, Brad?"
But okay,
close.
Brad, we're going to hang up on you and call back on another line. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I've been having a few bugs in my system here, and I just.
Okay.
Cleared that. Brian, go ahead and call him back. We'll get Brad back here in just a moment. And I'll let Brad speak for himself. But, Larry, in my discussions with Brad and other people, one of the real objections here is that a Rice University study showed that most voters don't know what to do with the paper trail. And that, as far as I know, H.R. 811 doesn't define the paper trail itself as a ballot, and therefore, in close elections, recounts, contested elections, or forensic audits, it's unclear exactly how that paper trail would be used.
Well, on the second point, I don't actually think that's correct, Peter. The bill actually calls, and I'm not sure that it should do. The bill actually calls the paper trail a ballot, and it says that when there is a discrepancy between the paper record and the electronic record, that the paper record is the ballot of record. So the language is quite strong on that point. So I don't think that's an issue. In terms of whether or not voters are checking the paper trails, I think that this is an area that has not been really thoroughly studied. To the extent that voters are not checking paper trails, I think that there's a lot that we can do to make sure that they do.
All right, let me
on the importance of that, and even if, you know, one of the things that we show in our study is even if only a small percentage of voters are looking at this paper trail, that it adds a tremendous security value when we're using these machines.
Okay, we've got Brad back. So, Brad, go ahead and make a couple of points here, please.
I will indeed. I only heard the very end, so I can't comment on the earlier part. And before I do, I just want to mention that the Brennan Center and what Larry Norton have been doing there, their study, they did a landmark study on e-voting security that is I recommend to everyone, which is really great. They're doing some great work in that regard. With that said, and just the last part of what I heard concerning the paper trail, which is not a paper ballot. It's unfortunate they call it that. But the Brennan Center study that Larry actually helped author points out one of the most dangerous forms of attack to these paper trail systems, which would allow the paper trail itself to be gamed along with the machine itself in such a way that an audit would never find it. And that's one of the biggest concerns and why I have been so troubled to hear the Brennan Center endorsing the Holt bill. I'm not sure why, because their own work shows really the dangers of that. And as Larry mentioned, you know, even if a small portion of folks do check their paper trail, this hack that they outlined in their own study shows exactly how you would hack the system, hack the paper trail and the internal numbers, and an audit would shore up such a gamed election as being a perfectly accurate election.
I think that is a huge threat.
Well, Brett, I have to make the point that actually what we found in this study was that if you can get just a small percentage of people to look at the paper trail, that in fact this kind of an attack can be caught.
Well, from what my understanding of this particular hack that we're talking about, essentially what it would do is it would flip every, you know, let's say 1 out of 10 votes. And if the voter happened to notice it, if they did check the paper trail, and they would say, oh no, I didn't vote that way, then in fact the machine would flip it back and print it out correctly this time. But it counts on enough folks not checking their paper trail that it would get through and, you know, could easily flip 2, 3, 5% or more in such a way that the paper trail would match perfectly with the internal numbers.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too much into the weeds of the study, but what I will say is, and I invite you to go back and look at that section of the report. We make the point strongly that if you have a small percentage of people looking at this, that it will be very difficult for this to be a successful attack, and there'll be many ways to detect that the attack had happened.
And my understanding is the way to detect that it had happened is that you have to have
a
pattern. You have to do an audit, but then in the audit, you have to have you have to look for patterns of canceled votes. And if you notice a certain pattern of canceled votes, then you might be able to go look further.
I should add that the whole bill requires that it actually specifically requires that when audits are done that the number of canceled votes has been recorded.
Well, the number of canceled votes may be recorded, but nothing about the patterns in there, and that is really the only way to catch this hack, as I understand it, and the Holt bill speaks nothing of that and opens us wide up not only to not catching fraud, but to what's even more dangerous is using an audit to confirm a fraudulent election as correct, and I could see that confirming a DRE election as perfectly correct, while an op scan would not be correct, and I think the end result could be that we end up showing that DREs are the best way to count elections, and op scans are discredited, paper ballots are discredited by this legislation itself, even though the opposite is true.
And gentlemen, I got to jump in here. We're late for a break. We'll return with Brad Friedman and Larry Norden from the Brennan Center at New York University. We're talking about the Holt Bill, H.R. 811, and you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security, investment, white picket fences. Did you know that real estate is the single most sought after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hey, what are you having for lunch?
My personal chef is making it now.
Your personal chef?
Yeah, the lunch lady in the school cafeteria.
Kids should think of me as their personal chef. Well-balanced meals at school are very important for their bodies and their minds. Make sure they eat right and take advantage of the personal chef in their school cafeteria.
Stay fit, eat right. Looking good, California, is a public service of the California School Nutrition Association. For help with your family's nutrition, visit stayfiteatright.org.
Have you ever felt trapped by fears, anxieties, and limitations in your life? Are there recurring problems you just can't seem to solve? There are solutions to the traps and puzzles of life, and Glenn Brooks, host of Vibrant Living, can show you how to find them. Join Glenn and Simone Zone creator John Mejia for a special Vibrant Living series on energy, psychology, and what it could do for you. This simple, respectful, drug-free, holistic approach based on current understanding of imagery, acupuncture, and focus can open up new insights and abilities. Saturday at 11 a.m. to noon right here on KRXA 540.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. TGIF. Thank goodness. Thank God it's Friday. Okay. We want to mention the San Jose problem. Sig alert. Major problem. It's northbound 680 after McKee. A vehicle struck a pedestrian. All lanes were blocked. They have been reopened. Emergency crews still on scene. Traffic is extremely slow from Highway 101. In Pajaro, it's southbound 1 before Salinas Road. Three-vehicle crash blocking the left lane there. Traffic heavy approaching the scene. San Juan Batista, it's northbound 101 at 129. Grass fire burning in the hillside east of the freeway. Fire department is on scene, and smoke is visible from the roadway. This report brought to you by Days Inn. Gas prices won't help your travel budget this summer, but Days Inn hotels sure will. Stay where you'll get a free daybreak breakfast, free high-speed internet, and trip rewards. Book now at daysinn.com for the best results under the sun. That is traffic on KRXA.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 24 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Larry Norden from he's the director of the Voting Technology Assessment Project at the Brennan Center on the Law at New York University. He is a supporter of the present form of H.R. 811, the Holt Bill. And also with us, our regular contributor, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, who opposes the Holt Bill in its current form. And just before we took the break there, gentlemen, first I'll mention that Larry Norden has agreed to stay on for another couple of segments. I appreciate that, Larry, and I apologize for the technical problems that prevented Brad from hearing you in the first segment. Brad got in the last word there about paper trails. Did you want to add something, Larry?
Well, I think the main point here is that I believe that our study showed that the kinds of things that are in the Holt Bill, even when you're talking about DREs and paper trails, having paper trails and audits and doing a lot of the other things that are in there, will make DREs and all voting substantially more secure. And the question is, what is the alternative? And the alternative is that in 2008, we're going to have 14 states that have paperless DREs, which I think everybody agrees are the most dangerous types of machines when it comes to both security and reliability. We're going to have 37 states where they're not using paper to check the electronic record. We're going to still allow wireless components on voting machines. We're going to have no access. We have this this litigation going on still in Florida over this election to replace Catherine Harris, where the courts have held that even though we don't know why 18,000 votes were lost, the litigants can't look at the source code. We're going to still have that on the books unless this bill passes. So I have to say I respect Brad very much. He's done a lot of great work. But my question to him is, why is the alternative better in this case?
Well, I'll be happy to answer that. I think that you had mentioned that. First, Ben, we may have to wait till after the break. But I don't know. I'd like to hear you answer if you believe that DREs actually can be made secure with or without a paper trail. But that in mind, I don't think paper trails on these DRE systems make things better. I think they make them worse. I think they would have made them worse down in Florida. where at least we know what we don't know. Had we had the Holt bill, had we had a paper trail on those systems, the computer scientists that I've spoken to, and I've spoken to many of them, have all said that, well, the paper trails likely would have said exactly what the screen appears to have said, which is that 18,000 people either chose to not vote or could not otherwise, didn't notice or couldn't change their undervote in that particular race. And now you would have a paper trail that says, well, look, 18,000 people chose not to vote. You have your paper trail here. That proves it. And that would have been the end of that case, and I don't think we would still be challenging that right now in Congress or in the state or so forth. So I think arguably paper trails make things worse instead of better on those DRE machines, because at least now we know what we don't know. And as far as alternatives go, I would suggest that if all of the computer scientists who seem to be almost unanimously against the use of DREs.
Well, I don't have
a crystal ball,
Brett. I don't think that that's true. And I should say, you know, that we had a task force on this report that I think represents the best of the best that have looked at this issue, and they were in agreement that paper trails and audits will make a substantial difference in making these touchscreen machines more secure. And secondly, I do not think that there is agreement among computer scientists at all that we should ban touchscreen machines altogether.
Well, David Dill has said, we should not use them. Avi Rubin has said that there is, after 4 years.
I should point out that David Dill and Avi Rubin are big supporters of the Holt bill.
That's right. Well, they are supporters of it, but what they have both said is that DREs should not be used, are antithetical.
Brad Friedman, Larry Norton,
and, yes,
will return after a break here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
So it means that our investigation turned up nothing.
If somebody testifies lying before a grand jury, doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda.
the Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women can rule.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you retire, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you've got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You've got to catapult the propaganda.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow. Hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests and you call in with your questions and ideas. And we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it five times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters. Weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect for you.
Oh, thank you, Grace Jones. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. As we continue with Larry Norden, an attorney at the Brennan Center at New York University, and he is director of the Voting Technology Assessment Project there at the Brennan Center, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Larry supports the Holt bill, and Brad doesn't. And, gentlemen, we ran out of time there as we were heading to the break last time, and let me just reconstruct. Brad was citing some studies from Avi Rubin and David Dill, and Larry had jumped in to point out that Dill and Rubin do support the Holt bill. Let me come back to you, Brad, to follow up there.
Well, yes, they do support the Holt bill, but all of them have said, and this is a lot of scientists on record and many others off record who I've spoken with, but the scores of them who say we should not use these DRE touchscreen systems, and yet some of them, indeed, as you mentioned, David Dill and Avi Rubin, are supporting the bill, but they're doing so on the basis that that a DRE, a ban of these touchscreen systems could not pass in Congress. And yet, time and again, I've asked as many of them as I could to give me the single name of a Congress member who is in favor of this Holt bill who would vote against it if it included a ban on DREs. So far, I've yet to get a single name in that regard. And I would suggest a lot of this seems to go back to the one group who I generally usually like and appreciate their work, but the one group who is actually in favor, prefers touchscreen systems over paper-based systems. That's People for the American Way. They and Holt's office have been claiming that a DRE ban could not pass Congress, and yet there seems to be absolutely no evidence of that.
All right.
And yet David Dill and Avi and everyone else has seems to have bought into this.
Larry, how do you respond to that? Number one, in a perfect world, if you were emperor, would you ban touchscreen machines? And number two, has there been a head count to establish that a ban could not pass at this time?
Well, I'll start with number two first, because it's the easier question to answer. There hasn't been a head count, but I've been dealing with this down in Washington and been dealing with the opposition to this bill, and there's no question in my mind that if there was a DRE ban on this bill, it would be dead in the water. If this bill fails, and again, I have great respect for Brad Friedman and the much good that he's been has done in protecting voter rights and voters' interests. But if this bill fails, it's not going to be because Brad Friedman and people opposed to the continued use of DREs are opposed to it. It's going to be because election officials have been screaming bloody murder that it's going too far as it is.
And that sort of shores up my point, really, in that we know that the elections officials are going to be against it as is. And so, you know, it would be nice if all of the election integrity folks, and I share, you know, my respect for Larry, certainly in the Brennan Center, if all of us were on the same page saying, look, this is what election integrity requires, we could band together to fight against the election officials who are just plain wrong. And if the Republicans in Florida, of all places, the Republican governor, Republican House, Republican Senate, if they can ban DREs, this notion that a Democratic-controlled House and Democratic-controlled Senate can't ban DRE touchscreen machines just strains credulity at this point. Had you guys stood up and said, yes, this is not only are these antithetical to democracy, but any bill that reforms elections must ban them, I would suggest we would have such a bill now, and we would still be fighting those elections officials, but we would be doing it together.
And Larry, the resistance that you cite, is it coming from officials who have already invested in this machinery and don't want to scrap it and start over? From my perspective, we're throwing good money after bad.
Part of the resistance certainly is that, you know, election officials just in the past few years have had to buy a tremendous amount of new equipment, and yes, they are resistant to the federal government telling them again, you either have to make all these changes or you have to buy entirely new equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But in answer to your first question, which I didn't get to,
yeah,
I'm not crazy about the idea of the federal government dictating what technology can't be used. I think that there's the more appropriate thing for the federal government to be doing is to set basic, and I think the Holt bill does this, basic security standards, basic usability standards, basic accessibility standards for these machines, and to say if you can't meet them, then you can't continue to use those machines. But to say that a specific technology is good or bad, technology isn't the answer for these problems. The answer is setting basic standards, setting basic procedures, and making sure that they're enforced.
Well, technology is certainly not the answer, and I would agree with you there. But in fact, the federal government already has set what sort of voting equipment can cannot be used in the Help America Vote Act to at least one extent. In Section 301 of the Help America Vote Act, it requires that all voters be able to verify their ballot before it is cast and counted.
Mm-hmm.
It is simply impossible for any voter to verify their ballot before it is cast and counted on a DRE touchscreen machine.
Well, they can verify the paper trail.
Well, the paper
trail
is the ballot
is not counted,
of record.
Though, that is the ballot of record under the Holt bill.
But the paper trail is not counted, and we discussed in an earlier segment how you can game both the paper trail and the internal numbers to match up, and in such a way that it would not be caught by an audit. So if you follow the federal rule, the federal laws that exist already, and frankly, common sense that tells us, you know, hey, a voter needs to be able to verify their ballot as accurate before it is counted, then that knocks out DRE voting systems. And if I could just throw out one question to Larry, are you familiar with can you name a single member, Congress member, who is in favor of this bill but who would withdraw their support if it included a ban on DREs? Because
what I can tell you to do, yeah, is look at a map of where DREs are.
Yeah.
And all of the Congress members that are in those districts that are supporting the bills, these bills, and I would be willing to wager that the vast majority of them would not be willing to support this bill if it meant that their states had to get rid of their machines entirely.
Well, let's not wager on our democracy. Are you able to confirm a single name? Have you talked to a single member who has said, I will support this bill, but not if it includes ban on DRE? Because I can't find one, Larry.
Well, I have to admit that I haven't posed that question directly to anybody, because I haven't particularly thought that that's the most important thing to do to make these voting systems and to make our elections as secure as possible. To me, the things that are key to making our elections as secure as possible is to make sure that we're auditing whatever paper we're using, whether it's a paper trail or it's an optical scan, because we know that both of them are incredibly vulnerable to both programming errors and insertion of corrupt software.
Well, I would suggest,
it's changing the process by which we're certifying these machines in the first place, which is so flawed and has resulted,
yeah,
in us certifying machines that never should have been in use in the first place. And to me, those two things are so much more important than whether or not we throw in the river machines that are used by 40% of the country.
Well, it does change the way these systems are certified, and the bill was certainly a lot better before it came through committee. Now that it's out of committee, you, as a computer expert, scientist, and so forth, may be able to look at the source code. I, as an average citizen, will never be able to look at that source code. I find that unfortunate. But, even at that, when you're using a system like that, and remember, democracy requires confidence by the public. When you've got a system that requires counts on audits to get things right, and the fight that would take place after Election Day, mm-hmm. I think you're headed for trouble. I think you need to get it right on.
That's going
to
be
you need to get it right on. If I could just finish,
sure.
You need to get it right on election night, and you can ask Christine Jennings, who here we are coming up on almost a year later, who's still trying to fight for an election that even the voting machine company, even the one expert for the voting machine company in her state contest, admitted she likely would have won the race had it not been for problems with those machines. You can ask Al Gore the same thing. You got to get it right on election night.
Right. I agree with you that if you could do that, that is the ideal situation, absolutely, and that's why better procedures in place and a better understanding of how to use these machines is important. But, you know, they weren't using DREs, or touchscreen machines, in 2000 in Florida. That wasn't the cause of the problems.
Right.
And optical scan machines, and we show this very clearly in our report, are just as susceptible to the kind of programming errors and software bugs and insertion of corrupt software and hacking as DREs. In fact,
but Larry, in that case, even if you have a corrupted optical scanner, there is a paper ballot that survives, and that can be audited in any kind of post-election activity.
It can be, but number one, right now most places aren't doing audits. The vast majority of states, even that have paper, are not performing audits. And secondly, as Brad pointed out, you're only going to find that out afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. You need
fact.
To do
that's unfortunately the situation. Well, there are a lot of benefits to electronic voting, whether it's by optical scan machine or whether it's by touchscreen, and I think this gets overlooked a lot. But we have a lot more votes recorded than we used to. We used to have a situation where every election day, because we had these hanging chads and everything else, you would assume that 2-3% of votes would get lost because that doesn't happen anymore because the electronic voting machines tell you if you made a mistake.
Well, I agree that certainly the optical scan paper ballot system is preferable over the punch card system, but we're not really debating that. I'd also agree that audits are useful and are necessary. I'm glad to see them in the Holt bill. I won't quibble for now about the protocols used there. We'll just say audits are good, but you know, if there's a question about the optical scan systems, which are susceptible, as you suggest, at least there is a paper ballot that we know reflects the voter intent. There is no way, even if 100% of the people checked their paper trails, and we do know a recent study at Rice University said 2/3 of the voters didn't notice vote flips on the screen in front of them. Even if 100%, however, did check those ballots, there is no way for me to know or you to know that they checked those paper trails.
But, you know,
you
I want to point
know
out
if that
one,
reflects
one,
voter intent.
I want to point out one thing about, and I don't want to be in the position of defending touchscreen machines because I think all of the electronic voting machines that we're using at this point have their flaws. But I do want to point out one thing about the touchscreen machines. You know, if I'm voting and I see that the paper record and the electronic and the what it's telling me on the screen don't match, it's very obvious, and I can say something, and I can have that machine shut down. I'm voting on an optical scan machine, I don't know if that's happened. I put in my ballot. I don't know what the electronic tally that they're going to use as the when they're adding up all the votes actually recorded my vote as saying.
Well, as you know, though, in your own study, in the Brennan Center study listing 120 e-voting security threats, the threat is not where you've got one thing on the paper trail and one thing on the screen. It's the flips that you can't notice, the type we talked about before, where if you notice it, the machine will flip it back, but enough are likely to get through. And now you've got, you know, this major bill in place that puts these audits in place for the first time, you know, presuming it gets through, and you're in a position right now to verify as accurate a completely flipped election.
That's a grave danger. And, you know, supporting a DRE, well, not calling for a DRE ban has apparently not made this bill any easier to go through, because we're still getting the opposition that we knew would come to this thing. So I would suggest standing up for what we know, and you know, as computer scientists, where what we know is right would be the right way to go, and fight it out that way. This is our democracy, after all.
Gentlemen, Larry, let me do a time check and just your availability. I don't know if you have plans this evening, but can you stay one more segment?
Sure.
Okay. Let me take this break, and then we'll get final comments from each of you. Brad Friedman is with us. He opposes the Holt bill. And Larry Norden, who supports the Holt bill, will continue in just a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 47 minutes past the hour.
Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
I have always said that I will listen to the requests of our commanders on the ground.
Mr. President, you did not listen. You continue to pursue a failed strategy that is breaking our great Army and Marine Corps. I left the Army in protest in order to speak out. Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women.
Sober Stones, do you have yours yet? Big Sur Jade is now available for you. This rare, beautiful, deep green jade is found in a tiny cove south of Big Sur, used by Native Americans in healing for hundreds of years. Keep one in your pocket to remind you of your commitment to living life present and sober. Go to SoberStones.com, SoberStones.com, for your beautiful pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day. Look at it. Sober Stones.
Here we go, folks. Here we are, and let's get to it. Talking about a problem right now. It is in, Pajaro Highway 1 southbound before Salinas Road. Three-vehicle crash still blocking the left lane, and we're still getting reports that traffic is rather heavy in the area as well. Again, fire department crews on scene, so be advised there. Also taking a look at San Juan Bautista, and there's still a crash being reported. It's a fire. It's burning on the hillside east of the freeway. Smoke very visible from the area. Northbound and southbound 17 looking very good. No problems to report there. This report brought to you by Sears Auto Center. Get ready for the summer road trips with the biggest Michelin event of the year at Sears Auto Center.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We've got a lively discussion underway about the Holt Bill, H.R. 811, intended to fix some of our problems with election systems and election practices in this country. Larry Norden, who supports the bill, is counsel at the Brennan Center at New York University. And Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, as you know, doesn't support the bill in its present form. I'll just add that in a recent interview with California Secretary of State Deborah Bowen, she said that she cannot support the Holt Bill in its current form. And, gentlemen, I know we had a conversation going there, but I want to allow Dave Berman to jump in here. Dave is an election activist from up in Eureka, California. Dave, thanks for joining us. A quick comment, please.
Yeah, Peter, you know, I've heard many, many times about different topics that if you have to choose the lesser of two evils, you're still choosing evils. And it makes this debate just seem completely ridiculous because ops scams and DREs, they're both counting votes in secret. We've got to have hand-counted paper ballots, and let's make the discussion about that. That's what we're doing here in Humboldt now.
All right, Dave, thank you for that comment. I appreciate it. And, Larry, to that point, I am one of those people who feels that the DREs can't really be fixed, and that while it is sad to acknowledge that HAVA was a failure and misguided, it's more important to really fix the system and get it right. And my fear is that the Holt bill will lock in privatized election systems controlled by corporations, not by the people who manage our elections. Larry, are you there?
Apologies.
Yeah.
I just don't see that. What I see is a bill that makes substantial improvements to the security and reliability of our voting systems. As I've already mentioned, it does a lot of really important things. And again, I just can't help but go back to what the alternative is. And the alternative to the passage of this bill is that we're going to have another federal election where we have 14 states that with paperless touchscreen machines where there's going to be no way to go back and do any kind of recount. If votes are lost, they're lost forever. And if you have a paper, if you have a paper trail and the votes are lost on the touchscreen machine, at least you have the paper trail. We're going to have 37 states that do no check on their electronic tallies. We're going to continue to allow wireless components on voting systems, and we're not going to change what's a broken certification system.
All those points are cogent, except that if we stopped using the machines, those problems would go away. And if we return to a fundamental system of paper ballots counted by humans, our election process might take a little longer, but it would be more accurate, and we would have much higher confidence and credibility on the part of the average voter.
Well, the one thing I would say about that is I want to go back to what some of the benefits of electronic voting are, and there are two key benefits that if you went back to paper and hand count, you would lose, aside from the fact that it would, I think a lot of people might not have patience for how long it would take to do that. One is that with the overvote protection that we now have on these machines, people are making less mistakes. And you have more votes recorded than in the past. And this particularly affects, you know, low-income and minority voters.
Mm-hmm.
Their votes are being counted at a much higher rate than they used to be because you had situations like you did in Florida in 2000 where somebody wrote in Gore and filled in the space for Gore. And because of that, their vote wasn't counted. And you don't have that happening anymore because the machine tells you you voted in two places. You can only vote in one place.
Well.
And the other is you have members of the disabled community who for the first time are able to vote independently and privately. And those are both huge advantages from electronic voting. And I would hate to see us go back to a point where we lost those advantages.
Well, my goodness, in New Mexico, when they moved from when they banned DRE touchscreen machines, and from 2004 to 2006, in Native American reservations, the undervote rate dropped when they used paper trails by 86%. On Hispanic communities, 69%,
yeah,
going just from DRE to paper trail.
Brad, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that's. Those figures are very misleading because you're talking about a specific kind of touchscreen machine that is very confusing that I have made part of my work to get rid of throughout the country.
Well,
in general, when you switch from DREs to OPSCANs, there won't be anything like that difference. In fact, there's an argument to be made that touchscreen machines for many races or do a better job at recording voter intent.
I know we're running out of time, but is there anything in the Holt bill that actually bans the full face DREs that you're talking about? Is there anything that specifically bans those?
Well, it requires a paper trail for all touchscreen machines, and as far as I know, there has been made yet no paper trail for full face. Touchscreen machines.
Well, that's right. And there is no paper trail.
So if they can't get one, they're going to have to get rid of them.
Well, but the fact of the matter is, you know, to use the idea that there are fewer undervotes, you know, that there are more votes, more votes is fine.
But if they're not accurate votes, I don't think that gets us anywhere. Second, you threw in a couple of false dichotomies there. One, by saying that disabled voters can now vote privately and independently, and I agree that is a good thing. However, they can do that on ballot marking devices that have the same interface as a touchscreen DRE, but produce a paper ballot that can actually be counted. And secondly, you said that the alternative to this bill was nothing. I disagree. I think that the alternative to this bill is the almost near universal agreement that we need to reform our election system.
Well,
and we could put through a bill that could easily take care of these problems in time for 08 and leave us with a ballot that actually reflects the voter intent that we can count on.
Larry, go ahead and make a comment, and give me about 45 seconds, then I have to wrap up.
You're asking me to identify anybody who wouldn't support the bill. If Brad could come up with 220 Congress members who say they would be willing to support a bill that bans DREs, I might reconsider my position. Well, look, you guys have, I'm sorry to say, the big money and the big lobbying power on Capitol Hill.
Not
and to tell us and that we can't ban systems because they won't pass in Congress, but be unwilling to name a name so that constituents can call their members and make sure they're educated about this, because I've talked to a lot of members, and they're not educated. They think that DREs, if you ban them, that blind and disabled folks won't be able to vote. That's just not true. There are ballot-marking devices that they can use just fine.
All right, gentlemen, I'm running out of time here. I want to thank you both. Larry, I appreciate you participating today. Larry Norden from the Brennan Center at New York University. And we'll talk again, and we'll see where all this goes. The Holt bill currently is stalled, and there are a lot of election officials around the country who are agitating against it. So, Larry, again, thank you for joining us today. Brad, just a final word from you, about 10 seconds.
Well, I just want to thank Larry. I really appreciate him showing up and talking about this. Hopefully we can do it again in the future. I think it's a good and healthy debate that we need to have. And thank you for having both of us on, Peter.
My pleasure. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Brad.
Peter and Brad.
All right. Take care. Thank you for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show today. It's been a thriller. Tune in again next time. We'll be here for you.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Ropp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective, here on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Karen Regal.
It is obvious that if the device had detonated, there could have been significant injury or loss of life.
Scotland Yard's Peter Clark says the bombs hidden in two Mercedes and parked in central London could have had horrible consequences if they hadn't been discovered. Correspondent Richard Roth's in London.
London woke up to a security clampdown, roadblocks and a fingertip search of tourist landmarks in case another bomb was planted nearby. And this afternoon they found one in a car that had been parked around the corner. It had been ticketed and towed overnight a mile and a half to Hyde Park, where the smell of gas fumes raised suspicion. It's clearly linked, police said, to the first car bomb.
I'm Mark Noller in Kennebunkport, Maine, where the president spent 3 hours fishing with his dad. But spokesman Tony Snow says that in no way kept Mr. Bush from staying up to speed on the situation in London. Snow says the bomb plot is a cause for concern, but there's no specific or credible evidence that would warrant raising the terror threat level in the U.S.
Five more American soldiers have died in Iraq. They were killed by a group of insurgents when they were attacked in southern Baghdad. Back here at home, fewer Americans are supporting the war in Iraq.
More Americans than ever before say that the war is going either somewhat or very badly. That's 77%. And nearly half of those, 47%, say it's going very badly. Only 22% think it's going well now.
That's CBS News Deputy Director of Survey Sarah Dutton. President Bush's approval rating stands at 27%. And it is the lowest since CBS started doing the poll. Oil closed up today above $70 for the first time in nearly a year. Cameron Hanover oil analyst Peter Butel says don't expect the price hikes to stop.
I hate to say, I think we probably are going to try to get up to take a look at 75. 78.40 was last July's high. I don't know if we're going to have a chance to get back to that level.
Butel says oil producers are taking advantage of continued refinery problems. Banking regulators are offering new rules for mortgage lenders as more and more Americans are running into trouble paying for their homes. Correspondent Barry Bagnato is that.
The guidelines take a carrot and stick approach. The stick, a warning that lenders must strictly analyze whether financially stressed borrowers can repay mortgage loans. The carrot,